Thank
Can
you,
you
Chair.
table the agenda, Lindy?
It's before the committee. Can you sit? I just put
on
it on
the table.
Screen.
Yes, sorry, my apologies. Briefing by SASA, briefing by NDA. All right. Do we want to do them? I think we should do them separately for decency purpose and professional purpose. Members, can you agree that we do them separately?
Agreed.
Thank you very much.
Yes,
that is the agenda. I'm tabling it for adoption, honorable members.
I will move for the
adoption of the agenda.
Thank you very much. Agenda adopted. Is Liz here? Good morning, Liz.
Good morning, Chairperson. How are you?
Yeah, where have you been, man?
I've been assisting Umtuana with some royal matters.
All right.
And I've been at Home Affairs Portfolio yesterday. My apologies.
Well, thanks. You are welcome. These are the only two items, Lindy. Am I correct?
Yes, Chair.
Okay. We start with SASA. How many minutes are they allowed to present?
25, 30 minutes, Chair.
Sistozi? Oh, no. Wait. DM, do you want to make any remarks?
Chairperson, Minister Zulu is here. I know there is an apology, but I'm joined. I'm on the road, but I have joined. So
okay.
They said
the princess is welcoming the queen.
Yes, Chairperson, I am. We are where we are right now. I'm able to join because we are in the waiting. So I decided to join the meeting. Yes.
So are you able to make any opening remarks?
I think, Chairperson, we did make opening remarks yesterday, so would rather have them presenting.
You can tell us those things, yes?
Hey, thank you, Chair. Thank you.
Dorothy, come in.
Good morning, Chair. I want to spot if the DM didn't want to make any supporting remarks, and I know that the minister said we should go ahead and do the presentation. I've asked the team, I've asked Rapahle Chair to fly the presentation here now. Chair, in terms of process, I will do the context, and then Rapahle, as the person responsible for strategy, will do...
Well, Chairperson, as the minister directed, I'm fine.
Thank you very much, DM. In terms of process, Chair, I will do the context, and then the executive responsible for strategy will focus on the program's performance plans. As we remember, Chair and honorable members, is that yesterday when DSD did the presentation, they highlighted all the different programs. And the program that we're responsible for was also covered in the presentation, and also some of the impact that we have on DSD in terms of particular areas that relate to the MTEF. But the CFO will talk to the areas that are specific to us in relation to MTEF. And yesterday there were also quite a number of questions in terms of that were answered by the portfolio committee with regards to where we are with regards to 350 and also where we are with regards to TDG. And at the end of the presentation, we will also answer questions that relate to those specific issues, Chair. I thought I should just highlight what the process is going to be. Can you then go to the next slide, Rapahle? I've highlighted, Chair, how we're going to run the presentation to make sure that we don't waste too much time. We've already The purpose of the presentation is for us to make sure that we present the plans for the upcoming year, and will also relate to the MTEF budget in relation to what it is that we need to do in this upcoming year. As indicated yesterday, Chair, we are going to have quite a major impact on the budget side because of the cuts that we have. We have about a 600 million budget cut for this year, which will impact both on the operational side, but also on the cost of employees, over and above the fact that we need to look at our operating model, the way we do the business, so that we can ensure that we don't impact further down the line. But in line with the revised framework for the strategic plan, the plan was approved by Parliament in March 2020, as the Minister of Social Development presented it. A number of interventions were presented at the time. The annual performance plan is, in terms of what we're looking at now, was prepared during the time when we're looking at the COVID interventions that we're looking at the time, which had a negative impact in terms of our people, but had a positive impact in some of the areas that we had looked at in terms of putting in place much, much later, but that we had to fast track to make sure that we deal with some of the operational challenges that we had. The pandemic, Chair, increased the need for social assistance drastically. And as we all are aware, the president then announced the special COVID grant for 350, which was the SRD grant that took the bulk of our time last year in terms of us making sure that we implement that, which impacted on an average of about 6 million people in terms of those that actually got paid. But the number of people that actually applied were about 10 million people. You can go to the next slide, Rapasha. As we are aware, in most of the provinces and nationally, what we are responsible for in terms of social grants is about 31% of the social South African population that relies on grants, and the 6 million that I spoke to that have been relying on the 350, which we are aware, of course, has come to an end at the end of April in terms of what we need to, what the allocation that we had. It's important to highlight as we speak to this particular grant that on this grant, there are a number of people that we needed to clear in the system, particularly those that were on referrals. And that's the area that we need to clean up, and some of the people that had applied through the banks that we need to make sure that they get paid, because as the grant kept on being reintroduced, it had impact in terms of us making sure that all the contracts that we actually had, we had to restate those contracts and recontract, particularly with the banks and all the other supporting structures that we have had. And this is what has impacted particularly on those people that get paid on the banks, on those people that are on referrals, to make sure that we clean up the system. And again, because the year end happened at the end of March, for those people that were not paid previously, we need authorization from a treasury that we need so that we can be able to pay them, because there'll have to be a rollover of those funds. For March, as we had initially had a challenge, we're allowed to pay for March and April, which we've done, but the challenge is for those people that had done referrals in the previous year, that we need to make sure that we get authority for us to be able to do that. In terms of the framework that we operate under, there are a number of variables that always impact on whether the number of beneficiaries we support actually increase or decrease over and above the processes that we use that are efficiency processes, and us making sure that we employ a number of gatekeeping strategies. The other issues that impact on us is poverty, unemployment, which rose in the recent period to 32.8%. Particularly in the last quarter, and the disasters that continue to happen do impact on families. We believe that there's also been another disaster that happened this morning in Khayelitsha in Western Cape, which is another issue that we need to ensure that the team can go and provide support for. Our main focus is mainly on us ensuring that we contribute to poverty reduction by continuing to support in terms of social assistance and the customers or the clients or beneficiaries that we provide support to is older persons, persons with disabilities, and children who are unable to support themselves. We also provide a reprieve for individual families that are experiencing a temporary distress, as indicated earlier on, which is a program that we've always provided support for, but because of COVID, we had additional support for clients that we've never taken care of in the past, which are between 18 years to 59 years, because those were new clients, for lack of a better word. Our responsibility is to also ensure that we invest in systems that will enable the migration from manual processes, which we've automated, and we've done extensive work over the past few years, but there's still a lot that needs to be done, obviously with the support and guidance from the portfolio committee as the leadership, and from the minister and the DM, in terms of ensuring that we do what we're supposed to do to automate and make sure that we can impact on improving the lives of the people that we serve. What we've noted is that from the COVID grant systems that we've put in place, there are a number of opportunities that this has created in terms of us in future being able to validate our clients properly than we've done in the past, but also to also look at the programs that we've included to make sure that we continue to improve the way we actually do business. I will not talk to this slide because I want to believe that the portfolio committee is aware, but in terms of the programs, the program that we are responsible for is a program two within DSD, and the areas that Rapahle will then talk to is basically the outcomes that we are going to be focusing on for the next year, so that we can give the portfolio committee comfort, but also potentially get input in terms of what are the things that we need to think about, especially as we do the operational plans and refine them, because these already exist. Thank you very much, Chair. Over to you, Rapahle.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, honorable members. Good morning, Minister and Deputy Minister and colleagues connected. I will be discussing, giving information on the programs in terms of the interventions that we are working on. In terms of the first element, of the first outcome that we contribute towards is the poverty, contribute towards poverty reduction, and the object of change in this particular area, we seek to provide social assistance to older persons, people with disabilities, and children who are not unable to support themselves. This is in line with the constitutional directive as prescribed for social development. And the desired impact is to contribute towards reduction of proportion of persons living below the poverty line. And in terms of the interventions that we are planning for this coming year, is that we will ensure that those social grants beneficiaries who still qualify and within the system, we continue to ensure that they continue to receive their social assistance monthly, and we ensure that they receive them in the program on time and in decently. We will also facilitate access to the new take-up or new entrants into the system, and in this particular case, the projections that have been estimated based on the poverty lines and the increased demand, we are estimating that we'll have new take-up rates of 1.2 million. This will bring together the total number of beneficiaries to be serviced to 18.8 million. Members will note that the numbers are required, they will increase from 8.3 million. However, in the projections, by end of March, we were projecting that the numbers would have been at 8.5, so the increase will be on average 300,000 in terms of the new financial year. And when we go to the next slide, here we're just showing the members the average growth of social grants over the past 3 years. You see that the growth has been just in line with the growth in the population demand. However, in 2020, we saw a slight decline because of the reductions in the temporary disability grants, most of which have re-entered the system. And now we ensure that we think we will be going back to the projected number as estimated and projected in line with our forecasting models. And also members will note that on average, the numbers of grants have been going down in terms of the disability and also on the foster care, whereas with the child support and the old age grant, we've just been seeing some slight growth in those two areas. In terms of the next element, are still on the outcome of providing, contributing towards poverty reduction, we will ensure that those beneficiaries who qualify are not excluded because of the administrative barriers. And in line with that, the interventions that we will be doing is to ensure that we remove the exclusion errors that lead to children below the ages of one being excluded or being where we make it difficult for them to apply for the grants. We will also work tenaciously to ensure that the foster care grants that are due for review are reviewed in time in line with the DSD, particularly with the amendments that have been made. We'll also noted that with the disability management model, the way we are implementing it, it excludes people administratively. So we will be reviewing the model in order to address those administrative barriers that make it difficult for people with disabilities to apply for the grant. The next element also still within the outcome of contributing towards poverty reduction, what we will be focusing on is to provide temporary relief measures to individuals and families who are experiencing temporary distress or undue hardship. In this particular case, what we have planned is that, one, we will ensure that we provide social relief of distress to applicants who are in disasters or are suffering or have lost their one of their caregivers. In this particular case, we have been allocated 391 million and the target and the projections is that we'll reach up to 390,000 beneficiaries. Again, we have also included in the target, although the extension is for 1 month, we have included the payment of the special COVID grant, which will be paid in April, but we've included it, this particular target, so that if ever there's any other intervention that may come, so we will continue to implement within this particular directive. And then on the issue of support initiatives, we'll also provide measures to support initiatives to support beneficiaries of the COVID-19 grant recipient. In as much as we may not be able to provide the grant, we have been working with other private partnerships who are willing to put a database that will ensure that they look for places where there's job opportunities, and we are linking with that. And as SASSA, what we do is to send SMSs and send information about job opportunities so that those who are able to apply can apply. We will also be linking with other government departments to assist in this regard. This brings us to the next outcome, which is to contribute towards economic transformation. In this particular case, our object of change is to ensure that youth unemployment results, which results in high numbers of special COVID-19 grant recipients and high numbers of caregivers for CSG grants, are supported. The desired impact is also to ensure that these people, if there's opportunities, the information is shared with them. The first element in our intervention in this regard, what we have done is to partner with the potential employers and scholarship sponsors in order to facilitate information exchange and ensure that the beneficiaries are able to take opportunities that happen. The first one that we've been working with has been NSFAS, where we provide them with information and a database of beneficiaries, and when they apply, they automatically qualify for that. The other element is that we have collaborated with the Harambee and the Youth Mobbing Partnership in order they have a website for employment opportunities. We send SMSs to CSG beneficiaries and COVID-19 grants, particularly those between the ages of 18 and 35, so that they can take advantage of the opportunities where they qualify. We may not be able to guarantee, but we believe that with this opportunity, it gives
social grants beneficiaries. And as we move into the next financial year and improve our system, we hope that we should be able to track whether any of our beneficiaries have been able to get opportunities through these initiatives. In addition, we are also contributing 30% of the SRD value that is awarded to cooperatives and SMMEs. In this particular case, we are also encouraging these beneficiaries to also participate in this regard. And through NDA, they are being capacitated and being assisted so that they can take advantage of the opportunities. The next outcome is in-house, which is more around improving the organizational efficiency. And here, the main thing that we want to change is to convert our business processes from manual to automated system. The desired impact is to bring convenience to beneficiaries and improve efficiency, because if our system are effective, then beneficiaries don't have to stand in long queues and they don't have to come to the office if it's not necessary to do so. So SASSA will, during 2021, invest in digitization of additional business processes, and the focus this time will be the rollout of the online grant application, which was developed in 2020 and piloted, and now we are doing the full rollout on old age grant, child support grant, foster care grant, and we'll also be introducing the SRD online application system. We will also institutionalize the interfaces that we established when we were implementing the COVID-19 grant, which enabled the data sharing and the verification of income. Although the regulations have not yet permitted for other areas to do online data sharing, but it will help us to validate information and to ask the relevant questions. We will also be implementing the Regulation 26A general deductions will be electronically implemented, which will reduce the number of people that have to go to the SASSA offices unnecessarily, since this is an easy process and we have already started to implement this. In terms of the migration from legacy system, as members would be aware, last year we had a challenge when we had to move or to implement the top-ups because our system is aged. And we are now working on an ERP system so that in the next 2 years, we are moving to an ERP system and we start to migrate more from that reliance on the legacy system. We'll also continue to explore alternative biometric identification. We have implemented in terms of staffing biometric identification, but we are also looking at other options that will also take measures that cover the issues, the challenges around COVID-19, where you don't only rely on the fingerprints, but also other elements of the biometrics and biometric identification. Still on improved organizational efficiency, we will seek to improve capacity and governance and accountability within SASSA. And in this regard, we'll continue to develop and implement the SASSA monitoring and performance management system, which already exists, but we need to improve it and ensure that it's aligned to the sector priorities and we are able to report in an integrated manner. We continue to implement the strategic risk register and also the fraud management system. On the fraud management system, we've decided that for this particular financial year, we'll start to want to improve on the preventions and the detection system more than on the investigations, because the investigations come once the fraud has been committed. So we want to do the preventions and to be able to improve on this element. The other one is to reduce on historical irregular expenditure and put measures in place to combat instances of irregular expenditure. Over the next 2 years, we're targeting that we should reduce by 75%. In the implementation, we'll also implement the skills development plan to address the outcomes of the skills audits that was conducted in the previous financial year. Still on the issue of improving organizational efficiency, we want to improve our measures in terms of how we do consequence management within the organization. And if we improve that, we believe the impact will be the reduced wastage and cases of non-compliance. In this case, we will finalize 50% of labor relation cases. We will also do the financial misconduct cases, and we'll also do the fraud cases, ensure that all of them are investigated on time and reported on. So measures will be put in place to ensure that we achieve this particular area. In terms of the institutional capacity, in terms of the capable and motivated workforce, We have introduced organizational transformation, most of which we commenced in 2020, and the rollout in terms of implementation. We did the procurement and the conceptualization in 2020, and coming into 2021 now, we will be implementing. First being the business process review will be implemented. We'll also do the change and culture survey, because if you're going to change business processes, they need to be supported by measures that deals with change management. We'll also do staff engagements and regular feedbacks, particularly to address some of the labor matters within the organization in order to support the changes and the vision of the organization.
So, and Tiba. Proceed.
Thank you, Chairperson. And as I've indicated earlier, we've also been investing in digital transformation, and I've already highlighted the digital transformation interventions that we'll be implementing. In order to ensure that we have informed citizenry, we will implement beneficiary education programs that will focus on issues around COVID-19 and the measures that we are implementing. We'll also continue to invest in financial literacy, because we want to ensure that people are using the card and the measures for payment and don't have to go to post office. There are other options. And also the anti-fraud messaging and the promotion of SASSA services, including the benefits of receiving social grants through electronic means within the national payment system. Chairperson, I will hand over to the CFO to continue on the budget element. CFO.
Good morning, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, the Minister and Deputy Minister. I will
how
be taking...
Sir, how many minutes do you need, sir?
Just 5 minutes, Chair.
You are a superstar. Proceed.
Okay. Thank you very much. I think we felt that it is important that we will be able to contextualize the situation that we as an agency and as a country we are faced with, given what Treasury has already guided in terms of considering the macro fiscal outlook, which means that there will be no additional budget that will be allocated to all entities during the 2021 MTF budget. It means that we are to really consider in terms of the planning, to look at terms of the plan and how we're going to reprioritize to be able to fund some of the urgent and high impact activities and projects and programs. And therefore, what we also needed to look into was to look at all the efficiencies that are required and consider the reforms that have to come with operational modalities. To make sure that the programs that are implemented give the best value for money. We also needed to look in terms of the MTF budget fiscal consolidation, which means that the entities need to assist the country in stabilizing the debt, which means that actually if ever we have to really take a cut, then we need to take that cut. So what is important for the committee will be to really look at saying that all the spending and the programs and activities need to really stimulate the economic growth. So it means that we'll have to look at where possible infrastructure investment. Next slide, please. So this, Chair, just give you the overall and give the committee and honorable members the overall depiction of how SASSA as an organization has been faced with since the 2019-20 or before the 2018 MTF. You will see that throughout the MTF, the SASSA baseline has always been reduced. You will see that in overall, if you were to look in terms of the total reduction in from 2018, you'll see that we started with the 573 million reduction and 1.1 billion reduction, 1.6 if we were to look at the cumulative picture. And for the year that we are planning, Chair, we have received 660 641 million budget reduction, you will see that from when you compare 2021 and 2021-22, you will see that even the budget allocation for the year 2021-22 is less than the budget that we have for the MTF, which we had for 2020-2021, which means that even the outer year, which is 2022-23, we are already looking at 817 million budget reduction. So when you compare in terms of the change on the baseline, in 2021-22, we have actually an 8% budget reduction. And going to 2022-23 over the MTF, you have a 10% reduction. So in terms of the abstract of the letter from Treasury for committee to note, is that even in 2023-24, we have a earmarked budget reduction of 715 million. So over the MTF, we do not expect any growth in terms of the additional budget allocation. Next slide, please. In terms of the split of the budget of the 7.4 billion, which we have got, we know that the 3 billion will go to administration and 4 billion will go to program two, which is benefit administration and support. In terms of this split, you will see that 60% goes to the benefit administration support and 40% will remain under administration. When we look in terms of how we have allocated these resources, the SASSA COE budget, Chair, you will see that we, based on the letter from Treasury, we're supposed to absorb the 641 million from COE. However, it was not feasible to cut the COE budget at once at 641 because it will really have had a negative impact, not only on the positions that we needed to fill, but also on the existing employees, because you will not be able to remove people from the positions that they have. But also the implication is that the consumer price index, we will indicate that all the contracts that were already entered before this had some, in other instances, clauses that will have actually an increase. So we'll have to renegotiate some of them, but some of them will have to absorb them during the year. We also need to note that the budget itself did not cater for any inflation increases. Although the prices of goods and services that we're going to procure during the 2021-22 will be factored with this, it means that we'll have to be hard in negotiation to test the market and see what would be available to get the best value for money. We will have a limited resources that would be available to implement in this project and programs, Chair. But based on this, we decided that there should be a couple of few strategies that we need to consider to mitigate against this negative impact on the budget reduction. And one of the issues is that we will be finalizing the budget, the business process reengineering, which this project itself will be able to enhance the future personnel planning and capacity, because it will be able to really establish the true need and refine the business processes within the agency. We have decided that we'll reduce the traveling and encourage the use of technology in running meetings and monitoring. That will be the order of 2021-22. And the existing contracts, what we are doing now is that as and when they expire, we will be able to be focused in reviewing them in terms of the current form to know whether we need to downscale some of the elements around it. And we also needed to improve in terms of the control, which is the use of the fleet, which means that the use of the petrol, the use of the telephone, we should be able to monitor those issues very closely. We will be implementing the cost containment in non-critical areas. And a draft is being considered around this to say which areas that we will be able to really manage the cost containment. But we need to raise this because, Chair, you will have seen in the 2019-20 financial year that SASSA has been running a labor dispute with the labor, organized labor, that they needed to have their members being elevated from level 9 to level 10 and from level 11 and to level 12. We have been really going through this process. It has been included as a contingent liability in the previous financial statement. And this matter, we're following very closely, because in a case that we may have to lose this, we'll have to really make sure that we make additional funding for it. We will be able to undertake the prioritization and reprioritization of activities to fund key projects, and we're going to monitor the budget very closely, that any potential saving will be utilized, and we'll take prompt decisions in allocating those funding. We are submitting to the Portfolio Committee, Honorable Chair, that the Portfolio Committee considers the annual plan for the 2021 and approve the budget that support the implementation of those plans. Thank you very much, Chair.
You have not kept your promise of 5 minutes, but we're not going to kill you for that. CEO, any closure? Are we done?
Chair, I think in order to enable a proper and appropriate time for engagement, we thought we will just do the presentation as is, and should we be required to highlight other additional issues, we'll be able to flight additional presentations. But this is what we provided to the Portfolio Committee, and I think we'll leave it here for now, Chair, not until such time that both the Minister and the Deputy Minister can do a closure at the end. Thanks, Chair.
You are giving credits yourself in terms of timekeeping, which I have not given. It's fine. Take that credit, Tozi. I'm not going to take it away. You are trying to give an impression that you speak very short. You spoke very short. It's okay. All right. Honorable members. Yo, the hands are there. That's Baya and Honorable Harris, Honorable Fanameve, Honorable Masango, Honorable Abrams, Akbare, Openman, Akbare, Stock, in that order.
Baya, thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, my name is Vanya Rivoort Sassauer and Raki Swak.
As I believe, you don't tempt my Afrikaans.
It's couple state Afrikaans, Jay. I want to find out from SASSA, what is the plans to ensure that in each town they get a fully operational SASSA office as part of their turnaround strategy? Remember, I have raised this issue a number of times in the portfolio where we sit, in areas that they, you know, that people don't have access to SASSA offices. And then, Chair, I've also noted that 47% of the budget, which is nearly half of the budget, goes to employee compensation. And I want to find out what measures do they have specifically with the poor service delivery that we currently see on a daily basis. I want to know what will the turnaround strategy be, as they have indicated in the presentation that they are really moving to make use of more technology. And then in SASSA's challenge with the SASSA cards, and that has been stolen. We have read that in the newspapers the past weeks and months, and I want to find out what was in this financial year, what is the plans, you know, with the to reissue cards or to have a new card system, and specifically, you know, these ones of the loan sharks that get access to our grant beneficiaries' money. And then I would like to find out from SASSA, fraud and corruption as the order of the day in this entity, what is the plans to intensify the funds the plans, what plans do they have in place to, you know, they must come and bring an outline plan to the portfolio. And then also in terms of those people, those beneficiaries that are on this system that are not in, eligible to be to grant the benefits of grants, those ones that are not supposed to receive this grant, what is their plans, you know, to clean their systems? And Chair, we need to be realistic. The SASSA, this say one, they want to reduce the turnaround time. We need to set realistic goals. They say they want to the waiting turnaround time from 10 to 5 days. And how will they achieve this target in
round
the
up, round up, round up, Aris.
Yes, and then the decline in the budget and how will they increase the service delivery and grant beneficiaries, Chair, and what is the plan to stop overcrowding specifically at the post offices, and how will SASSA deal with non-payments, because we have seen this recently in the newspapers. And then my worry is, however, that I was seeing that Tosi was saying that it is due to the end of the financial, going to the new financial year. So does that mean, you know, the fact that it was late payment, does that mean that that problem will then occur on a yearly basis, as it, every year we have an end of or the beginning of a financial year? Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Fundamental.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and greetings to our Minister, our DM, our CEO of SASSA, and our colleagues. Chairperson, I was very pleased to hear yesterday when I joined the meeting late, and apologies for that because I was at my other portfolio committee meeting, that indeed the department has approached Cabinet and Treasury to ask for the extension of the 350 Rand grant. I think they must be applauded for that initiative. And I just wanted to know whether they could give us an indication by when they would expect some feedback from Cabinet and Treasury in this regard, if they've got any indication. I would like to know, with regard to the appeals to the 350 grant, how many have we received to date, and how many has been adjudicated, and how many remain outstanding, and whether all of the 6 million grant recipients of this 350 grant have received all their payments. Because if you follow social media and other avenues and you engage with some people, people have been saying that some payments, some months have been skipped. So I just wanted to get an update in that regard. With regard to the AG and this specific grant and consequence management, the AG said that, and they told us on numerous occasions that there were people who applied for this grant and were paid, who were not eligible for this grant. Minister Zulu also told us at some point that investigations were underway, and once these investigations were finalized, they would recover the money from the 241 civil servants who defrauded the state. I would like to get an update in that regard, please. The AG also said that payments for SRD grants, as well as food parcels, vouchers, etc., were not done in terms of policies and procedures, resulting again in ineligible beneficiaries receiving this grant. I would like to know from the CEO, how will this be corrected? Chairperson, yesterday at the end of the meeting, you quickly touched on the issue of child malnutrition. And we know at this stage that there's no evidence to suggest that, for example, the SRD reduces child malnutrition. But solid evidence does exist that the child support grant and the 500 Rand COVID caregiver grant does actually alleviate or assist with alleviating child malnutrition. However, the budget before us plans to decrease the child support grant amount for this year and the subsequent years. And I think for us, as people who look after the interests of children, I think that should really give us sleepless nights. So I was wanting to know from DSD whether they are working at all with the Department of Home Affairs. I did ask them yesterday in our meeting whether they are working with the Department of Home Affairs in order to ensure mm-hmm. that we enroll more children under one on the child support grant, and whether they know whether the DHA is planning to increase early birth registration by increasing their footprint, and whether they're possibly assisting the Department of Home Affairs in this regard. I think with regards to the modernization and the plans to modernize SASA, you know, bring it everything online, it must really be welcomed. And I wanted to know whether in terms of modernizing your systems and bringing and automating all of your systems, whether you'll be putting this function out to tender or whether government chat will be able to assist you on this like they've done with the disability grant. The APP before us doesn't speak at all about modernizing and strengthening the call center. On slide 6, there is a brief mention of the call center, of the national call center. Currently, Chairperson, SASA has spent 30 million on bringing a company on board called Bites People Solutions to strengthen their call center. And that works out to 5 million a month. And I would like to know from SASA, do you believe that the investment of 30 million has made a difference in the efficiency of your call center? In other words, I know currently before you brought this service provider on board, you were only answering or attending to 35% of the calls you were receiving. So have you been able to improve your response time? And what happens after this when this service provider leaves? Will the call center go back to being inefficient, or have you made, you know, will there be a skills transfer, or what are the plans to boost the call center after this? In terms of the budget cuts, I did hear the cost-cutting measures, which the CFO alluded to, and they sound good. But I also saw that there was a, in this APP, there was a skills audit referred to. And an implementation of this skills audit. So I would like to know, in terms of SASA and its wage bill, do you anticipate having to let go of some staff in order to be able to operate in this environment where you'll have such a you know, reduced budget? Also, I'd like to know, in terms of your human resources and filling your key posts, how will this budget cut affect the filling of key vacancies which remain vacant? Honourable Aris did speak about the issue of fraud and corruption, but SASA as a entity, whenever you, almost on a weekly basis, you get reports of officials defrauding SASA, you know, cards being duplicated, syndicates working with SASA to defraud old age pensioners, disability people in getting disability grants. So then I was quite interested in the slide when it said that you are only now implementing a fraud management strategy. In other words, you will only now focus on detections, preventions, and investigations. So my question really is, what happened before? Did we only act after the fact? And again, like Honorable Ari said, what more can be done? Is it not time for example, an anti-corruption unit within SASA? Because currently, we're moving into a space where SASA will have much more, much less money to work with. The pressure on your budget will be more because more and more people are without jobs and will be relying on SASA. So clearly, losing 17 million a year, for example, like you did in the past 12 months due to fraud and corruption, we need to be able to put in measures to ensure that we don't bleed money through fraud and corruption. So what else can be done? And do you believe that this implementation of a fraud strategy, maybe, you know, like...
Yes.
Honorable Ari, yes, I'm almost done. Maybe
yes,
you
don't try to cover for your absence yesterday.
Okay, Chairperson. Then... I'm gonna then leave it to my colleagues. I'll put the yeah. I wanted to ask some questions around entity management because I don't think enough has been done.
Proceed, ask them. All right.
No, I wanted to just say that you know, I did hear the ADG yesterday speaking briefly on entity management, but I don't think enough was being done, Chairperson, because you know, the AG says that the performance and monitoring reporting was last updated and approved in March 2012. So really it doesn't gel with the ADG saying we are improving our monitoring and of our entities. And quite clearly, when you look at the AG's findings and their report, it leaves a lot to be desired. So really, I think more must be done in terms of entity management. I'm not going to ask questions about the temporary disability grant because it was covered yesterday. And so I will leave it for now. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you for not covering things that were covered yesterday. Honorable Masango.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you so much to SASSA for the presentation. My question, some of the questions have been covered, so I will not repeat those. But I would like to go, Chairperson, whilst we have the minister or even the SASSA CEO in the room about this reduction in budget. The presentation this morning started by saying that there is a higher need for the services that SASSA is rendering because of many things, including the coronavirus that we are grappling with. So my question, Chair, is what is the projected value of this child support grant in the 2022 to 2023 sort of period based on this budget? I am saying that because it seems to me like the child support grant is reducing when we are having more people needing this child support grant. And also, we do know about the gap between the child support grant and the poverty line that we are having in the country. So I would like to know what the value of the child support grant is in the 2022-2023 period. And also, Chair, yesterday the AG mentioned the issue of the ID numbers that are used by SASSA. I will be corrected by SASSA here to say the right things. But what I understood it to be saying is that SAPO submits ID numbers of the people that would have been paid or that would need to be paid by SASSA. And then on the basis of those ID numbers, SASSA then pays SAPO to pay those people. But there was a discrepancy between the ID numbers on the files, and which then a layman would say wrong people are paid or more people than are supposed to be paid are paid. And so I would like some clarity on this, because if there is a situation where SASSA has been paying SAPO money that they shouldn't have paid them on the basis of the wrong ID numbers or of more ID numbers, then something needs to be done as far as that is concerned. And Chair, the other question, I saw a slide that spoke to the allocation of 391 million rand that has been allocated for such social relief support. I just need to know if these people will be identified by SASSA for them to have access to this support, or how do people who qualify for this support access it? Like, what is the process, as it were? And then another slide that I was quite I quite welcomed was the one that is talking about a situation where SASSA will be working on prevention of fraud and all those things. And I think my colleague has covered, you know, the processes, how that is going to be done. But I would like to know that, have it confirmed that the investigations will still be ongoing, and if there's a need for investigations whilst they are working on prevention, they actually carry on with those investigations, because it's one thing obviously to prevent fraud, but fraud that is already in the system needs to be investigated and be done away with. And then I would like to know about the communication, Chairperson. I still go back to this communication thing that I've been harping on, because, for example, SASSA, in the newsletter of the Social Development Department that was shared with us, I then took a infographic out of it that was speaking to the online assessments that were there, and so I sort of shared it with my networks, only to find that process is actually not open. It's limited because it's a pilot. It's limited to certain areas. I think it's to the metros or something like that. And so people that were outside of that area thought that the system is not working. And then of course that created a whole lot of commotion in this sector. So my point that I'm trying to make using such a long example is that the communication or the lack of it from SASSA actually sabotages SASSA's own initiatives to try and make things better or easier for the people that they are serving. And Chair, my last point is on the staffing that the cuts that were referred to just to find out what is the percentage of the unfilled posts that we would call key posts that SASSA cannot do without, because also my observation, Chair, has been that in most cases the people that are in the front line that are in the client facing, at the client facing level, are not enough, or they are not capacitated enough or something like that, because so many of the complaints that we get, and SASSA takes, or SASSA management takes credit for making sure that they turn around those complaints that we send to them from people that are just so desperate, and they sort those things almost immediately. But that shouldn't be the case if we have people in the front line that are doing this work, because I don't want to keep bothering SASSA management or even the department's management for that matter with things that can be sorted at a client-facing level. So Chair, I would like to know what is the percentage of the unfilled posts that are key posts, and for me, key means people that are facing on a day-to-day basis, the people on the ground that are needing the services of SASSA. And saying this, knowing also that the speech yesterday or the presentation yesterday of the department highlighted, and today the CEO of SASSA also highlighted the fact that the needs for the services of the department and SASSA and the entities has actually risen because of the COVID-19 pandemic. Thank
you. Honorable Abrams.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you to SASSA for the presentation. I would like to echo everything that my colleagues have said, so therefore I will not repeat on the issues that have been raised, but just add where I feel there are some gaps. So on the issue of the staff reduction and the wage bill reduction and moving from 9 regions to 3 regions, the question was asked, you know, will they let staff go? But I mean, other interventions such as fixed salaries, salary freezing of managers, and also freezing of bonuses, will all of that be looked at as well in this this wage bill discussion that's been had? Then also on the issue that Honorable Masango rose on the online system for disability grants, it was launched on the 28th of April, but not operational. And as my colleague said, it's operational as a pilot. When will the online services for across disability, child support, etc., be operational for the entire country and not just, you know, launch and it looks good, but actually operational? Then also with regard to budget cuts and the 641 million budget cut, what is SASSA doing to actually recoup and recover debt owing to SASSA and to recover debt from services, maybe services that haven't been completely rendered? So what is SASSA doing to recover their debt in order to almost offset some of this budget cut? And then also the AG reported that SASSA is still facing a lot of difficulty with their procurement management and their supply chain management unit. And I asked the question to the AG, but it may be more relevant to ask it to SASSA. what seems to be the problem? Is it lack of training in your supply chain management units? Is it high turnover of staff in those units? Or is it just blatant disregard for the supply chain management rules and regulations when doing their work? And we saw the one slide that states that SASSA is busy with disciplinary processes, but at what point are we going to hold employees liable to actually pay back money for their mistakes if they have incorrectly or disregarded the actual supply chain management rules and regulations? Then also, I just want to add that, you know, we cannot be held ransom and hostage by unions, especially when it's going to come at the expense of grants to the poor people. So to SASSA, please stand firm on that. And since we touched on the topic of, and just before I say that, I noted that the top-up grant for the child support grant, it's not mentioned anywhere in this presentation. And I know it's because there are still some discussions with National Treasury. So how far is SASSA in those discussions with National Treasury on the top-up grant? And then lastly, Chairperson, since it was raised, the issue of child malnutrition in the country, just to remind everybody that childhood stunting in South Africa is still on 27% since 1999. Another thing that should keep us all up at night and that we do not seem to be addressing, concerned that the child support grant is, the budget is being reduced and it's still not in line with the food poverty line. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Opperman.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'd like to know if you take into account that the social grants have increased to 16 million since 1994. I'd like to know, are SASSA looking at a more comprehensive social protection system if you take into account the implementation of the district development model now? If yes, I'd like to know the details of this comprehensive social protection system. And if no, I'd like to know how they're going to sustain the current social assistance program. Then in SONA 21, it was highlighted the empowerment of people living with disabilities. I'd like to know exactly how will SASSA embark on bringing about economic liberty for people living with disabilities. And if you take into account the 11.44% budget cut in SASSA, almost a 1 billion budget cut for 21-22. How exactly will they alleviate the pressure on the budget in this MTF? And that's it, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you very much. You are the best today. Yes, yeah, if that is correct. Akhbare Dikhan. Honorable Stock.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Let me also join my colleagues in appreciating the present, really appreciated, which I want to raise quickly. And then one being that SASSA must continue to operate within the current compensation of employees expenditure ceiling, which includes, amongst other issues, accommodating the annual cost of living adjustment. And also, of COVID-19, and also the economy not doing, taking into consideration all those aspects based on the growing demands of the agency. And then, secondly, on the status records review, the AGSA has not only raised concerns, but has indicated that needs to be an agency intervention in the areas of compliance management and procurement, as well as the contract management. So my issue there, Honorable Chair, is to find out what measures are in place to ensure that these are urgently addressed so that they don't hinder SASSA's ability to deliver services to ordinary people on the ground. And then my last issue, Honorable Chairperson, I would like to find out, which is an issue also which was raised by the AGSA, around the some issues of irregularities which the AG has actually picked up, and with regards to the payments of the SRD grant, which went to wrong beneficiaries and all of that. Mm-hmm. And then this now has actually contributed to the issue that we as a portfolio committee has continuously been raising regarding the implementation of a biometric system, which will actually curb the issues of fraudulent activities within SASSA, and then the payment of beneficiaries, grants, and all of that. So I would like to know from SASSA, what measures have actually they put in place to ensure that some of these issues that just picked up, they are already being in the process of being taken around some of the people that may be involved in doing some of those bounces.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you. The challenge, Honorable Stock, you are not audible or legible. Is there a challenge with the network?
I'm experiencing a network challenges. There's no electricity in my area.
Okay.
I'm connected through the phone.
Just try again. Proceed.
Okay. How much, Honorable Chairperson? The first issue was that.
No. You're proceeding. We heard at the beginning. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Now, the last issue which I wanted to raise, I'm sure, is the issue that there were problems. Honorable members couldn't hear me properly. I think the last issue around some of the issues that were picked up by the AG in the report or presentation which was made to the Portfolio Committee, around some of the irregularities where grants were paid to wrong beneficiaries. So my issue there was that because this is an issue that we have been raising as a portfolio committee about some of the fraudulent activities within the system that continues to persist within SASSA, where people, the perpetrators are not being brought to book. So I wanted to find out from someone.
We can't hear you. We can't hear you, Honorable Stork.
No, I'm done, Honorable Chairperson.
No, thank you very much.
Proceed. Yes.
Okay. All right. CEO, I hope you will respond to AG members after member have raised the issue of the AG 2020 on your oversight role, oversight area. Your arrow is down, financial health. Actually, you have all concerns in all your areas of work, including oversight that is going down, financial management, which is slightly improving, financial health, no change, IT management, performance management, no change, HR going down. All of them, in terms of the color coding, they're areas of concern, areas of intervention. Honorable Abraham spoke about that, procurement and contract management, compliance management. Those are areas of war if you take into account that the biggest bulk of the money goes to this entity. Can you respond by 2011? We want NDA to be starting to present. You know what I mean by that. Thank you. Can you guys respond?
Thank you very much, Chair. I think I will ask the CFO, particularly on issues of financial management, in particular in terms of and supply chain, in terms of what the causes of the challenges are that we have and what plans do we have in place for us to be able to make sure that we deal with those issues. Honorable Van der Merwe raised the issue of the fraud strategy. We've always had a fraud strategy. What we're looking at, ma'am, is to make sure that we have a proper gatekeeping strategy to make sure that we don't allow wrong people or wrong beneficiaries to come into our system rather than focusing on being reactive. We do have currently a team that does the reactive work, but we believe by putting systems up front, we will be able to close the entry so that we can ensure that we pay the right people that should actually be on our system. So we do have a gatekeeping strategy, but there's more work that needs to be done to make sure that wrong people don't come in, so that we don't end up with a big debtors book that we have to manage because there's wrong people that we now have to go and collect from. We also are engaging DSD to look at also on the policy side to make sure, particularly on the issues that relate to the debt book, which the AG raised yesterday on the fact that it continues to increase. We have referred a number of cases, Chair, to National Treasury for condonation, but their view is that until they are clear on the gatekeeping strategy, they will not condone those. And we're working together with DSD to present collective plans so that we can then present those to National Treasury and as a collective ensure that we close the gates in the front. Honorable Van der Merwe also raised the issue of the call center and as to whether we're going to look at opportunities of improving on this and make sure that we manage it ourselves. Yes, ma'am, we definitely are. We've done the business case. We've done a plan to ensure that we can look at this ourselves and take responsibility for our clients. We're also investigating an opportunity of how we can also learn from some of the work that is being done in DSD, for example, in terms of how they are managing people that are affected by GBV, so that we can learn from each other, but also make sure that to some extent over time, we have a common entry in terms of customers that we serve as a portfolio and manage that better. In terms of addressing the decrease in budget, we currently don't have a specific plan in terms of reducing people per se. We put in place a process last year whereby, because last year, as the portfolio committee members may remember, that we did not get, for example, budget for us to implement the 350 in terms of systems and processes and capacity that were required. Therefore, we took from cost of employees and actually invested in us doing the work that we did in the past year. What we also did was we identified key and critical resources that we needed, particularly for issues that the AG has raised, which relate to controls, and we continue to manage this. We've got different buckets in terms of looking at what are the people that we can employ now, depending on where we are with the process, and what are the people that we may take a view as an organization not to employ, and we're also consolidating with regards to making sure that we do more with less in terms of consolidating some of the responsibilities. Honorable Alexandra also raised the issue of the consolidation in terms of our operating model. We're not there yet. The business process reengineering will help us in terms of identifying how exactly should we address the consolidation, particularly at the top. Ma'am, just to highlight that in terms of the existing dispensation in terms of what has been approved, actually we should be having about 50 general managers, which I think is a bit of an overkill in terms of ensuring that the work happens on the ground where people are actually required. And even in terms of the top structure, what we had in the past, we had 22 people that were reporting to the CEO, which made it very difficult for one to focus on strategic issues. So the business operating review is going to help us in terms of identifying key and critical areas. And from our perspective, and what we've always done is to make sure that particularly those people that attend to beneficiaries on the ground are available to be able to do that. I think the impact has been the fact that with COVID, other people were not able to actually be available all the stuff that we had. On the issue of stolen cards, which has been raised by Honorable Aries, I think this is an issue that we've reported on before, that the card issue is actually not a SASSA competence, for lack of a better word. But we continuously, based on the structures that have been put in place by DSD and from the minister's side, have continuous meetings with SAPO to look at why are we continuing to have leakage in terms of cards being reissued to wrong people, which is an area that is a fraud team investigation that both our teams work on between us and the support team to make sure that we close the gaps. But yes, I agree that the issue of the card reissue is a plan that is in place that is not consolidated yet, because SABO is still waiting on particular decisions that need to be made by us as part of this forum between DSD, us and SABO, to decide as to what are the controls that we're going to put in place in terms of the new card that is going to be reissued once all the arrangements and the plans have been approved by the Reserve Bank. And how are we going to brand the card, and what are the issues that we need to make sure that we take responsibility for, so that these things don't actually happen in future. And we have identified that the fact that these numbers are continuing to increase and are a cause for concern for us. And this happens in many instances where the card is reissued to a wrong people. On the issue of the other issue that relates to our relationship with SAPO that was raised, which was raised by the AG yesterday, it's the issue that talks to how do we pay SAPO. I want to indicate that we ended up taking a long time to pay SAPO again, because we're validating as to whether the people that the payment file that we've given SAPO for payment are the people that would have been paid by SAPO. So much as we may have had an issue in the previous year, we've put controls in place to make sure that this does not continue to happen, so that we pay a SAPO for the people that they've actually paid on their side. As the committee is aware, 70% of our clients are paid for by SAPO, and 30% are paid by the banks. And in some instances, you find a client paid by a different, what you call, platform. That's why we've ensured that we validate and we verify the payment file to make sure that it's aligned to SOCPEN before we actually pay SAPO. So we've managed that in the past year to make sure that we don't have challenges. The other issue that has been raised was with regards to the public servants that were paid with regards to SRD. We have to collect each and every penny that was paid in ERA, but it's very important to indicate to the committee that what we also need to do is to make sure that we have efficient mechanisms for us to be able to deal with this, because again, some people were paid in ERA, other people we ended up not paying. There's two issues we need to address. As for us, it's the issue of consequence to make sure that those, particularly the public servants that got paid in ERA, that we not only get the money back, but we're engaging also the departments where they work to make sure that there's also consequence management in relation to those. The other people that sit outside the public service, others were actually not paid in ERA. It was just just a process of them still applying for the actual grants. And we are looking at the system as to who is it that we need to actually go back and collect from, and we'll use different mechanisms. If it means we are going to have to actually list people with the credit bureau, and they will have to clear their names, and rather than us throwing a lot of resources for us to manage this. So these are all the issues that we're going to be engaging DSD to look at. What are the processes that we'll put in place for us to ensure that we actually do this differently? I think that Diane, together with Karen, will come back in and report on where are we with the numbers with regards to the people that still have not been paid, and where are we with regards to the process with National Treasury to make sure that that has been addressed. We did do a skills audit last year already, particularly at high levels, to make sure that we can close the gaps, not only in terms of what we require only today, but also what we require in future. We started the process with regards to all the executives and the general managers, whereby not only did we do an assessment of what qualifications people have, but also what skills do we need as an organization to make sure that we're able to address the things that we need to address, not only today, but also into the future. And we've put plans in place to make sure that the training that is done for those levels is training that we require for us to be able to improve on our current performance, which the AG indicated yesterday, which also the chair actually highlighted. So those are some of the things that we're doing. The other key area is for us now to look at the senior manager level and also our front end staff to make sure that they have the correct capacity to do what it is that we need to do. And we put sufficient training for them to be able to deliver what is required, particularly at customer service level, because I think as the member highlighted, in some instances, many of the issues are issues that can easily be resolved at front end level, and to make sure that not only do we train our people on processes, but we also train them better on customer service and making sure that there's sufficient capacity to deal with those. I will ask the CFO to talk about the broad issues with regards to the budget impact and what we normally do with regards to people. I must say, Chair, we talk about the issue of bonuses. With SASSA, we generally, there aren't bonuses that accrue to particularly to executives. And as to the other issue that the honorable member raised on whether we're going to be looking at cuts in terms of people's salaries, we fall under the public service. So whatever the public service agrees on in terms of what needs to be done, it's normally what the process that would normally follow as an institution. I know that we still have quite a number of questions. I'll hand over to CFO to address some of the issues, and maybe to Mr. Mahlangu to address particularly issues that relate to the systems and the system rollout in light, or Mr. Makondo to address those issues should we have time. Thank you, Chair. Zaki.
Thank you very much, CEO, and thank you very much, Chair, for the opportunity. I'll cover number of key questions that were asked. Maybe let me start with the issue of the budget and the impact that it will have, and what I have already alluded to, what will be our strategy to mitigate against it. Within the COE, what we have realized is that because of the operational requirements, we have set up a committee that is currently busy now. It is actually looking in all the operational deficiencies in all the areas, especially on the front line in local offices and on areas of compliance. And this committee is currently reprioritizing the budget that relates to the filling of vacancies. So we have taken a decision that we'll be able to conclude that process led by HCM. And there's a committee where we're looking at the operational deficiencies. So we're looking across all the regions, across the district and across the local offices. And the outcome of that will be able to tell us which areas we need to be filling those positions, because as the budget is shrinking, we'll have to reprioritize some of the key positions. And one of the areas that we have identified as a principle from the ESCO point of view was that the areas relating to service to our people is prioritized. The second area relates to supply chain management, that where there are vacancies and areas where there is vacancies around supply chain management, we have prioritized that. Part of what we have been able to pick up is that in other regions, we did not have people at senior level. We have recently appointed a general manager in finance in the Northern Cape. We have appointed one in Eastern Cape who assumed duty this month. And we are prioritizing the Mpumalanga region. And in those regions, we'll be able to have the head of finances filled on for those positions. But not only about that, in all the regions, we'll have to fill in the senior manager, supply chain management. And that will be able to curb the gap in terms of the technical advice on procurement and also on the structures that exist there. So we have taken a principled decision about prioritizing the areas around supply chain management, Chair. Key issues that were found that were, well, very important within supply chain management. One was the vacancies, which I've already spoken about. One of the other issues was the training, especially within the procurement committees. We have taken a decision actually to train both internally, which is the handholding, and also externally. We are currently looking at having a partnership with the National School of Government to at least deal with the procurement issues so that some of the officials and managers will be able to be helped. We have reviewed the policies as the standard operating procedures on supply chain management last year, Chair, and we are, have been rolling it out and observing it. I will be doing a visit in all the regional offices just to support in terms of how the committees and the procurement issues are being managed. We are reviewing the delegations now, which will at least be finalized by the end of this month on the supply chain management, looking at all the risk adjusted in terms of the areas. And one of the areas that we have looked into is the issues of the deviations, where you have to apply yourself to a situation and take a decision. And that particular part, we are actually looking at that, and we are using the senior manager supply chain management compliance to able to assist us in that regard. The other area that we have seen, which has been one of the issues, was the interpretation of the instruction notes. I think during the year 2020-21, I think during March, April, and May, we have had number of instruction notes issued by National Treasury, and there has been a different interpretation at the beginning of the year. And what we have done was to elevate that the issues of the instruction notes, we should be able to have a discussion, which is called the SCM Forum, just to be able to assist them to interpret in all the nine regions. And that would be able to close the gap. In terms of the contract management that has been set in this regard, as part of the year-end plan, Chair, was to review and look at all contracts to make sure that they've been adjusted. And one of the issues that the AG has always been worried about was that sometimes we'll at least approve the variation of a contract, but when you go to the contract register, you find that it has not been updated accordingly. And this is part of the year-end processes so that we are able to deal with that issue. We do note that there is an issue around
You accept that the picture is not acceptable.
Yes, Chair. Yes, that's what I'm saying. That yes,
we have. It can't take too long to deal with this matter.
Yeah, yes. What we have done in terms of the plan, Chair, is that we are prioritizing that particular area. And we're looking at all the areas that are there. One of the areas that you will find that the AG has been complaining about was the whole issue of the management of the lease portfolio. It is a matter that we have raised previously, And we said that we are currently reviewing the policy and just at least to get the minister to consider that. And once it's done, we can at least be able to augment. Because in some of the properties that we are currently occupying, you find that we don't have a valid lease because we are waiting for the Department of Public Works to be able to finalize the procurement. And we are asking actually to say that we can, in the meantime, intervene and get a temporary arrangement so that we get out of the regular expenditure. Because the bulk of the regular expenditure for 2021, Chair, it is around the lease portfolio.
Okay.
So
okay.
We'll be able to prioritize that part, and we are not necessarily delaying in with regard.
Are you done?
Yes, I think those are the issues that I needed to clear. But one of the issues that, as I step out, is the issue of the consequence management. We have to try to mitigate against non-compliance, and what we are taking is a zero tolerance to non-compliance to police and prescribe. Because we have had a backlog of cases, we have prioritized that and managing it actually as a project. And we have had a good result in terms of moving. However, we still had a bit of work that needs to be done because some of the hearings had to be postponed several times because of the logistical arrangement and because some of the hearings cannot be held online. We have to physically meet and some of the issues that have delayed it. But we are prioritizing that. Thank you very much.
Yeah, no, thank you. I think the CEO must accept that. I want to insist the CEO, the AG report about the entity is not looking fine. And what really worries is that some of these things are basic things that management should get over and done with. And I think it can't be said in HR you are going down. It can't be said in procurement, you need intervention and you are going down. That's a combination of terrible things. Compliance, you need intervention, no change. And I think I want to insist, I think this matter needs a close attention, CEO. And can we leave it there?
Thank you, Chair. I do agree with you. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. NBA?
Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning, Minister. Good morning, Deputy Minister, honorable members and colleagues. Thank you, Chair, for the opportunity. And Mr. Muruda, please flag the presentation.
May I request the host to enable me to share the presentation?
What are you saying, Peter?
Please, Linda, allow Mr. Moreira to share the presentation. Thank you.
He is a co-host. I've allowed him.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. We are presenting the APP for 2020-2021. As requested, what we have decided to do was to bring about the elements of the review strategy as was tabled last year in March and together with the ATP. Next slide, Mr. Morule. In this financial year, we have taken an approach that has been compounded by the shift due to the pandemic, which had an impact in our interface with our civil society organization, which is our key beneficiaries in terms of delivering our mandate. Move, Mr. Morule, please. Next slide, Mr. Morule. Mr. Morule, next slide, please.
Yes, I've gone to the next slide, CEO.
It's not moving on my side.
Which slide are you on, CEO?
First one, annual performance plan 2020-21-22. Move to the one that has a purpose and a contextual background, please.
Can you see the slide?
It's not moving. Can I check with the members if the slide is moving on your side?
Yes, yes, yes. The annual performance plan.
Yes, yes, Chairperson.
Yes, we see that, unless you're talking about the next one.
It's not next moving. One. Can you move to the next one, Mr. Morule, please?
I've just moved to the next slide. I'm on the presentation outline. Are you there? Can you see?
It's not moving. It's not moving on my side.
No, it's also not moving on my side.
I've gone on to the next slide. Is it moving on your side, members?
No.
No, it's not
okay,
moving.
Reshare it. Exit this screen and then just reshare it. My apologies for that. Is there any movement on your side, members?
Nothing is showing now.
I can't see the slide.
Nothing is showing now.
Let me try to upload it on this slide again.
Nothing, Ben.
I've said it. Is it showing now?
It's showing on the first chair. Can you confirm if it's showing on your side?
Yes, I see the title, Purpose.
Okay, thank you very much. The purpose is to present to the Portfolio Committee on the Social Development the Annual Performance Plan 21-22 and the MTF budget for the financial year 2021-2022 until 2024. Thank you, Ben. The outline. The context, what we have done is we're busy reviewing our strategy together with our APP. This is the layout of the presentation, is to give the contextual background, the mandate, to remind the Portfolio Committee of the mandate that we are discharging our services through, indicators, MTF budget, BPR progress report, and then we'll have our recommendations to the committee. Our key focus here was to review, taking into consideration the council and the input and the guidance from the Portfolio Committee on the smartness of our KPIs and our targets in the prior financial year. We've taken the council and engaged the AG in reviewing the process of our planning in terms of the smartness of our KPIs and targets. So that brought about the attention of reviewing the number of the indicators that we had previously in the previous financial year, which was 19, to bring us to the number 12. This will sharply focus our intentions and our interventions to what will yield to the impact and the desired outcomes on the program that we deliver on. We're now sitting with 4 indicators in program 1, 5 indicators in program 2, and 3 indicators in program 3. This also addressed the issue where we were experiencing the duplication during the reporting time and during the audit time. The challenges that we're incurring was the challenge of the duplication of some of the indicators that we had crafted previously. So it has eliminated those duplications in the programs, eliminated the non-impactful indicators, and removed unfunded indicators so that we can focus our shaped budget to the much needed areas of impact. The APP has been developed in alignment with the MGA Act, and it has also been developed in alignment with the Minister's Settlement Agreement and the MTSF, which is over 5 years. And also it has served and approved by the board. And as I indicated earlier, that it did serve through the process of being reviewed by the AG as directed and guided by the Portfolio Committee. Then the KPIs and technical indicators, as we present them today, have been amended in line with the input of the AG during their review process. I want to quickly touch on the legislative mandate that assists us to discharge our services. The challenge with the mandate, which we seek to review through the Department of Social Development, one is in the main, is the two-in-one. It's two mandates in one. So at times, it yields to challenges when we have to account for our programs that we discharge. So this is one area that really has brought about the much needed expedition of making sure that we review the mandate. And secondly, the issue of the grey areas within the legislation, which is the PFMA and the NDA Act. So these are the areas within which we seek to the guidance in terms of what we've facilitated as areas that needs to be reviewed during the review of the Act that we sharply want to raise. But we will continue up until it's reviewed to discharge our mandate as outlined in this legislation. We've since reviewed our vision at a bigger picture. Our vision before, we were not much into the impactful statement as outlined in the reviewed one. We want to reduce the level of poverty in South Africa. In our vision before, it was society free from poverty, but we've since enhanced it to say we want NGOs and agencies to champion the development of the societies which is free from poverty, which is directly aligned and espoused in our mandate as in the NDA Act. And I won't go through the mission and all that, but I want to zoom in into the organizational values, especially in the value on innovation. This was compounded, and I think for me, the pandemic, COVID-19, really brought us to reality that we needed to be innovative in how we discharge our services. Though we are challenged with the ICT environment within the communities that we serve, but the COVID-19 showed us that as much as the ICT are still remaining a challenge into the rural communities in the main, but where we could not interface with our communities, we saw the gap of how they were affected in discharging their programs, because we could not facilitate their grant funding processes. We could not visit them on time. Monitoring and evaluation in terms of visits, site visits, we could not do it under the complete level 5 lockdown. So we are now since reviewing how we discharge the hybrid kind of service delivery, which will have an element of innovation where digitization will be brought into the space of how we deliver our services. Go ahead, Ben. On this one, this is our 5-year strategy, and it has six key focus areas. I'm saying six with the sensitivity on the first one, which we had already started in the previous financial year, that of the amendment of the Act, which we have started in terms of what we could identify, what was challenging us in terms of legislation. We know that NDA Act was promulgated way before the PFMA. However, when we implement, especially in terms of partnership, where we seek partners that will donate a CSI, the resources and all that, when we are finalizing and we are implementing these partnerships, we are challenged in terms of prioritizing the premier legislation, which is PFMA, which really makes it difficult for us to get out in the woods of making sure that we don't get findings in terms of this conflicting legislation. Within the 5-year time, we want to have an NDA turnaround strategy, which is championed by the board in how we have to shift in the way in which we do our services and deliver our work in the communities, taking into consideration the challenges that have been brought about by the COVID-19 in the space of the civil society organization that we partner with in delivering our services. We want to review our service delivery model. We want to strengthen the CSO's capacity to deliver on the mandate in the new normal of the COVID. That will enhance even the behavioral change aspect of things within the communities. We want to review our business model, like I've touched on the innovation of digitization of some of our business model, so that we are able to observe the protocols that have been brought about by the pandemic. We also want to strengthen the NDA institutional capacity by making sure that we reskill, we recapacitate, we, in our review of our strategy or our organizational organogram, we align our capacity to much needed areas for impact in our community. Then we want to measure our impact and our outcomes. We've since identified 4 outcomes with together with our board into saying we need to really focus on the outcomes within these 4 areas where our will be measured, where we continue to check if we are still making an impact in the community. The good governance remains the key in terms of making sure that our environment is enable effective systems in place to achieve good governance. So it cuts across all the areas where ourselves, our board, and all the systems that we utilize to interface with our civil society organizations, which are our beneficiaries, allows us to conduct ourselves within the environment where we comply to all legislations and policies as outlined by our legislation. So amendment of the Act falls within the same premise of good governance. We want to establish effective public-private partnership modalities to effect the development goals. Here we're saying the revenue that we generate through the strategic partners, we want to make sure that we up our muscle on that one, as we have seen that the purse is really shrinking from the allocation of the national treasury, which is brought about by the landscape of the economy globally. So we want to ensure that we strengthen, we've seen that there is a potential in strengthened partnership through Solidarity Fund, through other interested parties who want to contribute to augment whatever allocation that we get from government. So if we can address the issue of the grey areas within the competing legislation, then we think we'll be able to generate more income that will be channeled to civil society organizations to do their programs in fighting poverty.
Are we not including number of ECPs that applied? Because they will ask as opposed to. It's what we need to tell them this thing.
Sorry,
it's not complicated.
Lindy, please mute that person.
Oh, thank you, Chairperson. In terms of the self-sufficient and self-reliant communities, we aligned this to our mantra as a sector, where we want to ensure that strengthening civil society mechanisms, formalization towards achieving NDP goals. We want to move together with our civil society. We've seen that the ever-escalating NPO registration, that data has shown that there's an element of competing within our civil society organizations and our NPO environment. However, we want to move with them together as a partner at a bigger scale rather than at an individual competitive scale so that we can be able to achieve self-sufficiency within the reliance of the communities that we serve. And this will also assist us in fund strategic poverty eradication initiatives, not we hop around in each and every corner. There is a food garden, an independent food garden. We want to have communal gardens. We want to have bigger scale of economic empowerment initiatives at a bigger scale in alignment with the DDM, the district development model. So that's where we're saying if we can advocate for this program, advocate for this mantra, where communities will think as communities, not as households and individuals. Influencing development policy through thought leadership, want to develop a research agenda for improvement of NGA work across the spectrum. Remember, NGA is not merely for social development. However, it reports to Parliament through the mother department, which is social development. However, it cuts across all government departments that we service in the space of community development. On poverty reduction targets, Chairperson and members, we want to align ourselves to the aims of the NDP, that of eradication of poverty and inequality. And Yes, Chair.
Can you go to the slide before this one?
Thank you, Chair.
I'm trying to compare, and then the slide before that one. The slide before the one? Yes. I'm trying to compare similarities and then the next slide, then after this one. No, not the one before. Yes, let's be there. Because I'm trying to check similarities. According to Ngafani, maybe through your presentation, I'll call you back to explain this metrics.
Yes, Chair.
With exactly what is relating to what and what is what. I think it's very important. But just proceed until the end and come back.
Okay. Thank you, Chairperson. Then I said I would not dwell much on this one because here what we're trying to highlight is to say in whatever that we do in the goals that we set, we are much alive to the reality that as our strategy speaks to the elimination of poverty and our outcomes in terms of the key four outcomes, we are basing it on the poverty and NDP aims. That of reducing the proportion of persons living below the lower bound poverty line at from 39% from 2009 to zero by 2030. If that is possible to achieve with now the pressure that has been brought by the pandemic, we are here to see and we are here to partner with whosoever to try and make sure that we strive at least to achieve some. Reducing income inequalities from 0.7 in 2010 as the data that we have as a country to 0.6 by 2030. We will also want to share of income going to the bottom of 40% of income earners should rise from 6% to 10% by 2030. Yes, we are challenged as a country. We know we are challenged as a global, but we need to have plans in place. Should things become normal, what are our plans that we are seeking to pursue? We want to reduce the poverty-induced hunger to zero by 2030. With all the partners that are fighting the hunger initiatives, we are in the space with them. Here we are trying to indicate the poverty lines as depicted by our study, the baseline amount, which is the report on the April 2020 in terms of prices. This is where we are as a country, and this is what we look like. In terms of the lower bound poverty line is the preferred threshold that is commonly used for the country's poverty reduction target outlined in the medium-term strategic framework and national development plan and sustainable development goals. We want to make sure that at least we stay in this with our initiatives and interventions together with all government departments and private partners, mainly donors in the private sector, to make sure that at least we keep it like that and we cannot go beyond that. And with this 350 that we continue to have as a country, we think it will augment much needed support as a shock between that time, which is 2030, that we are looking into, that we fight poverty and we fight hunger. I will now, Chairperson, with your permission, give to Mr. Morodo to zoom in into our program, how we had planned to deliver on our program. Then after that, he will be followed by the CFO, who will be dealing with the budget issues that we have presented in this presentation. Thanks, Chairperson. Mr. Morule.
Okay, thank you, CEO, and greetings to members. I'm just going to go through the specific indicators and NTF targets for three programs. The CEO has already alluded that there are 12 indicators. In program one, there are four indicators. The first one that addresses the outcome of good governance is percentage reduction of cumulative balance of irregular and fruitless and wasteful expenditure. The target it is to reduce this historical expenditure by 80%. And again, this is an indicator that is carried over from the previous financial aid, also comes from the minister's performance agreement. So our effort towards contributing towards the minister's performance agreement is to ensure that there are processes in place towards the reduction of this historical irregular and fruitless expenditure. We had already done a lot of work in the past financial year, which would have resulted in about 66% of such historical expenditure being reduced. But to refocus the members on what the intention is as it regards the object of change and the desired impact, is that we want to reduce this expenditure so that we put measures in place to combat instances of IFW expenditure, in particular so that the money goes and is spent in areas where it's supposed to be spent and it does not go through such unnecessary expenditures related to irregular and fruitless and wasteful. And we are hoping that the desired impact of this would be NDA being able to attain at least.
Who's speaking, Mr.?
Mr. Morule, Chair.
Mr. Morule, as you proceed, I just want to complicate your conscience as you present that. Are you guys saying you want to take 5 years to reach 100% in IFW? Just keep it in your head, and when you are done, I just can't believe that you guys are saying it will take 5 years for you to do that. proceed?
Yes, I think we'll respond to it as a question.
Okay, proceed.
Yes, I think as I proceed, the second indicator in program one relates to integrated information management system, the development thereof. We've already started the process where the board has approved the ICT master plan. Within the ICT master plan, there's a phased approach to implement aspects of that master plan. And this specifically responds to Section 4 of the Act, which mandates the NDA to create a single central repository where information about CSOs can be advanced to funders, so that there's one single repository where funders can access such information to further development activities through collaboration with this particular CSO. So we want to have this integrated portal developed in 2021-22, and then in the forthcoming financial years 2022-23 and 2023-24, it is to implement various other aspects of this ICT master plan. The impact as we allude to it in the slides, chair and members, it is to increase access to CSO data by NDA stakeholders in direct response to the requirements of the Act, which is about making sure that there's a CSO database, and the same CSO database can be advanced not only to private funders but also to government departments as well, so that there's a clear linkage of our role as NDA as the coordinator of the CSO sector, and you are able to advance a CSO database to any funders and donors in this respect. The next indicator relates to the skills audit. We have already done last year, and this is continuation of that work that has already been done. We have implemented the skills audit within the NDA, so that we assess our skills base as an agency, and we determine our skills needs going forward. And out of that exercise, there's a number of key recommendations that ought to be implemented. Of course, these are they are related to how the NDA can best configure itself in terms of skills base, so as to ensure that we are able to deliver on our mandate. But important is that the recommendations are limited to funding that is available. To that extent, we'll only be implementing 30% of those specific recommendations that will be coming out of the skills audit. And over the MTEF, which is the 3-year period, Chair, we'll then be looking at, as funding becomes available, we activate recommendations related to the skills audit report. The next indicator relates to the approved turnaround strategy. The object of change here is to reposition the NDA. We want to reposition the NDA so that it aligns fully to government's policy direction necessarily. And importantly is to make sure that NDA is fully repurposed. Currently, the status quo is that the NDA is fully dependent on fiscal allocation from National Treasury. But where the NDA is in terms of its own mandate, we are mandated to be able to raise funds from outside. And I think we have not done very well in that particular respect. So in order for us to reduce that dependency from government allocation, so that we can empower CSOs to develop and to be able to develop the communities within which they serve, we want to have this approved turnaround strategy being a focus area in 21-22. And we are hoping that the approved turnaround strategy, as the CEO presented in relation to the strategy, it will look into areas such as the skilling of employees within the NDA, the service delivery model of the NDA, even the business model of the NDA. But I think importantly is the aspect of where NDA relates to CSOs and being able to empower these CSOs to play a significant role in the economic development of the communities they serve in. So that in a nutshell is the approved turnaround strategy. That's a project that will be and engaged in throughout this financial year, right towards and the next and last indicator on program one is the state and CSO partnership model. Again, it links to the point that I just made around the work of the CSOs in the communities. What we realize, even as we are mandated by Section 1 of the NDA Act, that CSOs play a crucial and significant role in the communities. Yet there is no state and CSO partnership model that is in place, you know, to regulate that type of relationship between state and CSOs. So as an agency that is enacted in place to coordinate CSO development, with, and again leaning from the Minister's Performance Agreement and the MTSF, we thought it would be appropriate to have an approved partnership model which the CSO community and state will be a signatory to, which will then regulate that relationship, and it will be implemented in subsequent financial years of the MTEF. The next indicator, this is now on program two, members. The first indicator on program two is around resource mobilization. We have a target in the strategy to raise 500 million, and we've already started implementing year one of that particular target, where our target was about 100 million, but we were only able to raise 12 million. I think that speaks to the impact of COVID and our ability to, you know, to raise funds, or inability rather to raise funds to the target that we had set, where we were only at 12 million. So we have since revised our targets downward quite significantly, in the hope that in the subsequent years we'll be able to push up this target so that we still realize the 500 million target. But our current target is sitting at 20 million. And primarily these funds are raised for the advancement of community-based socio-economic intervention and transformational projects. And this is done through CSO. So we mobilize these resources, and they are fed towards development interventions that are run by CSOs. So again, this gives effect to Section 1 of our Act. The next indicator, I think I've jumped, sorry, members. Okay, the next indicator is number of work opportunities created as a result of CSO development interventions. Again, this is carried over from 2021 financial year, where we implemented a volunteer program, and our target in that year was 2,000. We have significantly reduced this target so that we focus on these CSOs and actual creation of work opportunities within the CSOs, even beyond what the form and nature of the volunteer program was, so that there are actual work opportunities created by these particular CSOs. So there's a range of interventions that we advance towards CSOs to ensure that they are able to raise to create these particular work opportunities. We're looking at having about 500 of such opportunities. This is almost a post-COVID intervention that we are putting in place, because we came with the 2,000 volunteers, but we want to sustain that particular momentum going forward. But we are cognizant of the reality post-COVID that we may not have the level of funding. Also, the fact that our funding has been reduced quite drastically by about 20.5 million in this current financial year, and over the MTF, it is, I think, to the tune of 60 million. So our ability to create these work opportunities to the same tune as we had last year is quite limited. But we are hoping that the overall impact of this indicator would be contributing towards job creation and reduction of poverty. I think it, all these areas of inequality and unemployment that the CEO has already touched on in relation to the strategy. The next indicator relates to our core mandate, which is capacity building and strengthening the capacity of institutional capacity of CSOs. Our target is 1,800, and again we have taken this target quite significantly high compared to the 2021 target, which is sitting at 300. The reason we had that indicated 300 is because, of course, there were restrictions in relation to travel imposed by COVID, and therefore our movement was quite limited in that regard, and therefore our reach and coverage would have been limited as a result. What
what we are doing now, because there are relaxed restrictions in place, we are now able to reach more CSOs and empower them in relation to their institutional capacity. So there's a suit of interventions that we run, financial skills that we empower CSOs with, management skills, project management, conflict resolution. There's quite a number of interventions that we run in this particular space relating to capacity building. And those are the interventions that we will be targeting these 1,800 CSOs on. And we are hoping that even as we say that we want to establish a state and CSO partnership model, that this will be the capacity building will become a key component of that, so as to build stronger CSOs that are able to implement sustainable programs and contribute to socioeconomic upliftment of the communities they serve in. The last indicator on program two, and this is a core indicator that relates to our primary mandate, it's that of disbursement of funds for grant funding. And we are targeting to have 95% funds disbursed to grant funding. So as to empower these CSOs to be able to deliver on development aspirations of the NDP necessarily. So we targeting that through identification of CSOs that are relevant towards income creation, so that it also contributes towards creating work opportunities, that we are able through this grant funding to advance funds to the CSOs, and in return they are then able to create work opportunities through the various projects that they implement in these particular communities. I'm going to be going to the last three indicators on program three. Chair, this one will be quick and then I'll be done in a minute or two. Number of research publications undertaken to provide a basis for development policy. The indicators in program three, they come squarely from our secondary mandate, which focuses on research, on evaluation, and sharing these reports, these whatever comes out of this research and evaluation processes that we undertake. In relation to research, our research is targeting beneficiaries, or rather beneficiaries outside the NDA. It's not internally focused, it's outward focused. It's in particular so that we can influence development policy. If you look at the verbatim reading of our secondary mandate, is that we must be able to contribute effectively towards and influence development policy. And that's exactly what we want to do with this particular research. So the researches that we focus on are primarily looking towards assisting government in relation to coining and fashioning development policy as it relates to a community, to CSO development, and all related things. And the next indicator relates to evaluations. These evaluations, chair and members, they are necessarily internally focused to NDA so that they can improve program implementation and even program decision-making in some areas. So there's three that are targeted in relation to the key programs, and we have a research agenda that guides us on what to focus on, the type of evaluations to be conducted, and the reason for such, and what kind of evaluation questions will be addressed by these particular evaluations that we'll be conducting. So there's three that are targeted and three for each. And we are targeting such a low number so that we can have in-depth studies, even if it's cross-sectional studies, but these are in-depth studies that are able to inform us on how we should program better and implement our programs with better clarity. The very last indicator relates to number of dialogues held with external stakeholders to inform development policy. And this emanates particularly from the researches that we conduct, where out of these particular researches, the researches are not for NDA's consumption and consumption only, but they are outward based, as I said. So in the last financial year, again, this is an indicator that comes from last year, and we are pursuing it, giving it significance and importance. So we've had similar dialogue sessions with academia, with government, and CSOs, all in one room where we are sharing research findings and recommendations, and we even get to a very large extent a lot of input on further improvement of the areas that we have researched in. Chair members, I think I will pause there to allow, with your permission, the CEO to take us through the next budget-related slide. Hello?
Yes, we're waiting for you guys to finish.
Morning, Chair and members, CEO and colleagues. It's Karen Muthan here, the CFO. I'll be presenting the budget. So, Chair, in terms of the transfer allocation for the NDA for the 21-22 financial year especially, our transfer allocation amounts to 215.9 million. Now, this represents a 20.9 million reduction from the previous MTF allocations, as well as a 270,000 rand decrease on our prior year budget. Now, when we include our other income, which is mainly made up of interest income, that's what we've budgeted for in the budget, our revenue for the 21-22 financial year amounts to 217.9 million. Now, this has been allocated between our three programs, which is Program 1, which is our governance and administration program, has been allocated a budget of 105.2 million, which you will see on this slide here. And this represents 48% of the total revenue budget that we are expecting. In terms of the allocation for Program 2 is allocated an amount of 102.4 million, which represents a 46.9% share of the budget allocation. And Program 3 has been allocated 10.2 million, which is 4.7% of the total budget. Now, in terms of the main operational program, which is Program 2, our CSO development program, the actual allocation excluding employee costs amounts to 27.7 million, which is allocated to this budget. And this represents 13% of the total budget. And important for the members and the chair to note is that the budget has been decreased on the prior year, mainly due to the termination of the volunteer program, for which we haven't received budget from National Treasury as yet to continue with the implementation of that program. Just also to highlight that in terms of the employee cost total for the NDA, this amounts to 141 million, which makes up 65% of the total budget allocation. I just quickly want to go through the main items under each program, Chair. So under Program 2, which is the operational program, CSO development, the key expenditure items here, so Program 2 has been allocated, as I've mentioned, a budget of 102 million. And the key expenditure items here would be grant funding of 13.5 million, capacity building of 3.8 million, CSO engagements of 2.9 million, and our project monitoring and support costs of 3.3 million. We've also allocated a budget to digitization of 4 million. This is a continuation of a project that was approved in the prior financial year. We did engage in a tender process for this. Unfortunately, the responses received were not responsive. So that tender will go out again at the beginning of this financial year. So we're just finalizing the TORs. Then in terms of Program 1, the key expenditure items here are operating lease costs of 12.8 million, IT costs of 7.3 million, consulting and professional fees of 5.3 million, audit fees of 4.8 million, and travel costs of 3.5 million. In terms of Program 3, can you switch back, please? In terms of Program 3, the main expenditure items here are research studies of 2.1 million, evaluation studies of 1.5 million, and then you'll see that the salary costs coming through there of 6.2 million. So that is a high-level summary of the budget, and it is aligned to the KPIs that are planned. Thank you.
Members, we have also we have also included the BRRR recommendations and the progress made in this regard. There are four recommendations coming from the portfolio committee that we ought to be addressing. One relates to irregular expenditure and the reduction thereof across the social development portfolio. Our contribution towards this recommendation is that we've identified already about 96.1 million towards for condonation to National Treasury, and National Treasury has not as yet responded on this particular condonation request from the NDA, and this would have resulted in about 66%. So it would have been a significant knock on historical irregular expenditure as it is. The next recommendation relates to, just let me go to the next slide, relates to quarterly reporting and having action plans to address the AG's findings. We have already put in place an action plan to resolve the findings and working with internal audit, because this is an area that our internal audit function presides over, but we have submitted all required POE and work towards resolving the things about 69 findings that were identified in the 19-20 financial year. And our current status quo is 67%, where even all those that have not been resolved are sitting at 60% and above. So quarter four being the final push for the annual for the financial year would be realizing perhaps above 80% on this. But I think internal audit is best placed to for the comfort of the members in particular to give further. To make further inputs on this as a committee director. The third recommendation relates to the NDA being able to furnish the reasons for target not achieved. And I think we have improved quite a lot in relation to this, such that we have POE collected for reasons that are advanced. And again, this then gets fed to internal audit for further assessment and analysis of whether the POE submitted is requisite enough and it validates the accuracy of the quarterly reports. The last indicator relates to NDA putting in place preventative and detective control as early warnings of non-compliance and poor performance. NDA management and internal audit should also put in place a system that will record performance information throughout the year. So there has been quite work undertaken in this regard. First, in relation to operational plan itself, the full development of the operational plan and the monthly monitoring of that plan, in the sense that it served these operational plans, they served ESCO and ESCO endorses them. And again, there's quite a big role for internal audit to play to assess our performance and ensure that what is recorded is requisite with the POE that has been advanced. I think that that takes care of the BRRR recommendations. As I said, we only have four recommendations in the BRRR report. The last recommendation, members, relates to just the recommendation for the portfolio committee to approve the APP and the MTF budget, and again also note the BRRR progress that NDA has made. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Are we done, CEO?
Yes, Chairperson, thank you very much. That brought us to the end of our presentation through those recommendations. Thank you, Chairperson. We are ready to take questions and answers. Thanks.
Honorable members, Excellent Ian Hunt, clear the hands. Clear hand, air the hands, fear the hands. Honorable Aris, followed by Honorable Alexander, followed by Honorable Mervin, followed by Honorable Opperman. In that
Chair, can you hear me?
Yes.
Well,
yes.
Okay. Chair, I just want to find out from the NDA, they have indicated that they will distribute funds to 1,800 CSOs. But then I also noted that within their presentation, they say they, for this financial year, they will only create 500 job opportunities. And then I also would like to find out what type of job opportunities are there. And then I would also want to find out, because one of the areas of the NDA area of responsibility is to get funding from international donors. And then I want to find out within this financial year and past years, how many international donors did we have that was donated to the NDA? And then the CSOs, what is the estimated target for this financial year to do development work effectively? And I've also noted that the food poverty is 13.8 million. And I want to find out from them, because I've noted they say that they want to have a zero hunger in 2030. By that time, we have lost nearly millions of people because of the hunger currently in the country is reality, food insecurity. Then I have read that I just want to get clarity on the failure to appoint new board members. If the board is fully functional, what is the situation? And one of the risk mitigations is to strengthen the intergovernmental relations. And I want to find out from the NDA, with which other departments did the NDA have relations to strengthen their programs? And and then I also would like to find out from the NDA if they can provide us a list from all the CNDCs and what development programs are in each and every one of these CNDC community nutrition development.
Chairperson, can I go?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you to NDA for the presentation. I would like to ask, why is it that the skills audit for the next financial year 2021-2022, why is it that only 30% of the skills audit can be done in a year? Why can't we push a higher percentage in a year? Does it really take that long for a skills audit to be completed? Then also, Chairperson, if I'm looking at slide 26, program one, can the NDA please elaborate what consulting fees and professional fees are they paying at over 5 million for the next 5 years? And similarly, what are those IT costs that are 7 million a year? And then what discussion has the NDA had in terms of the operating leases versus continue leasing buildings and buying buildings? And of these buildings, are there any spaces that are not currently utilized? Are we paying for buildings, leases that are currently not used by the NDA? Then, Chairperson, the AG brought to our attention that there is an IT project, Nzlamo IT project, that the NDA has paid 85%, but it has not been implemented yet. Can the NDA please elaborate on why they have paid for a service and a project that has not been implemented? And
Which one is that, Abraham?
I hope I'm pronouncing it correctly. Nzlamo project. It was on the...
No. You are not far from pronouncing it. I can hear what you are saying.
Okay, thank you. And then obviously, how much is that 85% and what is that total cost for that project? And is that cost part of the 7 million in the IT cost? if they understand what I'm trying to get at there. And then also, Chairperson, looking at Program 1's budget and then Program 2's budget, where they've also got employment costs of $74 million and Program 3's budget, it seems that the NDA spends more money on employment costs and operation costs than it actually does spend on CSO grant funding and capacity building. If my calculation is correct, it's only about $28 million of the entire budget that actually goes to CSO support and funding. And I'm just trying, and the NDA must please help me understand, how do we then motivate for such a big operational budget and such a small budget going to the actual core mandate of supporting CSOs? And if they ever want to, you know, see their vision and their mission achieved to decrease poverty in 2030, is this the right way to go? Because I just can't, and then maybe they need to show us how are they monitoring the impact, the money that's going into the CEOs to actually see the difference on the ground, that lives are actually being changed on the ground by capacitating the CSO. So maybe if the NDA can just, you know, try to explain how do we validate spending so much on operation and employee costs, so little on CSO costs, and then still trying to achieve a reduction in poverty by 2030. Thank you, Chairperson.
Is it Honourable Liz?
Ja, baie dankie voorsitter. Ek sal vinnig wees. Because I've been covered.
I just play that word.
Okay, voorsitter. Ek sal vinnig praat. Moenie worry nie.
Nou, thank you, Chairperson.
I've been covered by the Honourable Abrams on the skills audit. I would also like to know why would it take such a long time to be able to implement and effect the skills audit. Actually, a year would be enough to roll out 100% of the findings of the skills audit. I also feel that you know, there's another talk of a turnaround strategy, but it feels to me like the NDA has been in a perpetual turnaround strategy mode, and somehow I would appeal to you, Chairperson, that at some point that we do get a separate meeting. I know our program is very busy, but that we fully interrogate this turnaround strategy of the NDA. With regards to the poverty reduction targets and the discussion that we've had earlier on child malnutrition and child poverty and the concerns that we've got in this regard, I would like to know, how do the NDA plan to shift focus to make a greater impact in reducing child malnutrition and hunger? In other words, you know, will you focus on supporting more CSOs that will support children in communities? And similarly, I would like to know how many CSOs are capacitated and that focus on gender-based violence interventions in communities through the NDA. We spoke previously, I see that there is money being spent on marketing and communications, but I think in a previous meeting, we did raise the fact that the NDA is largely unknown. And therefore, I think in terms of marketing and communication, we still need to do a lot of work in trying to lift the profile of this entity, because I think the reason why people are not coming forward to volunteer to serve on the board is because the entity is not known. And I think that's also going to have a big impact on your ability to attract funding from donors and from businesses at large. And finally, like the Honorable Abrams said, you know, looking at your budget, I'm quite worried that you would spend so much money on consulting and professional fees. Over $5 million spent here, and I would also like to get clarity on exactly why you're spending so much money on consultants. Similarly, the monies that you're spending on travel and accommodation, over $3 million, or planning to spend over three million, and in the following year, 3.2, 3.4. I think, you know, cost-cutting measures are very important. I know you do go out to communities to assess, but surely some of these things that are listed here, spending a lot of money on, for example, repairs and maintenance, spending a lot of money on almost 1 million rand on stationery, and then the other costs, another 2 million listed for this year, next year, and following years. Can you just give us more information on all of these costs that you're incurring, which looks to me like quite high cost if we consider the fact that your core mandate is to support, empower CSOs. So really that consulting fees is quite worrying, especially also the traveling and the other costs that are listed here. Thank you, voorzitter.
Well, thank you. Who comes next is Honorable Akbar Opperman.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'd like to know from the NDA the Mikonzo approach
Opperman.
In this year. Chair, can I go ahead?
Yes, please do.
The NDA's Mikonzo approach ends this year. So I want to know, since its implementation in 2017, with how much did the NDA increase their footprint through the service delivery initiative? And then initially they had a target of 1,500 CSOs. How many of those CSOs have been linked to sustainable resource opportunities since 2017 to date? And they said they need to generate 500 million through triple P's. I want to know how much revenue are they currently generating through strategic partnerships. Thank you, Chair.
Yes, thank you very much. Those are the only hands, Lindy, am I right? Ms. Ntabo?
Jefferson?
Those are the only hands. Where are you coming
yes.
from?
Yes, Chair. A member, Opperman, was the last member to raise questions.
Yes. You see, CEO, I think I am tempted to agree if the Honorable Minister and the Deputy Minister are here, that a close look at what NDA is doing, maybe a special close look at that is going to be very important. How do we do this? Because there's a lot I think we need to understand so that when we do scrutiny, we are on the same page. For instance, I'm not querying anything, but I'm just struggling to understand things here. Almost similar to Honorable Abrahams, like when you say consultation and the professional fees of 5 million, which is a standing figure in the multi-year, and somewhere in program two, you talk of CSO mobilization and formalization of 3 million, CSO capacity building 3 million. It seems that needs close examination so that one can have a sense of material difference on these issues. Not that somebody is saying these things are wrong, but if you look at the mini budget you have and the size of your mandate and how monies are allocated, one has a sense at face value that how optimal are we actually using this little money that is at our disposal. And then I agree with one or two members who say, maybe we'll need a session just to get the total narrative of these things. So that when you talk mobilization, capacity building, consultation fees, that is about 5 million, which is almost a standing fee for multi-year. And the one of mobilization is also the same story. That one of capacity building for CSO, same thing. So one needs some narrative. I think I agree with those members. We need to look at this. Look at the research, which is just 2 million. You are not sure whether that figure is taken off the head. What are the objectives of the research? What are the achievements? What are the results of that research for a small institution like this one and with such a huge mandate. And then if you go CEO to the very first line that I was speaking about, I don't know whether to call it the very first one. The slide immediately, even if you go just to visioning, where you speak about your impact statement, reduced levels of poverty in South Africa, whatever. One of the challenges about these things is the baseline. When you talk about how you view yourself at a certain point in time, I'm a bit weary about whether indeed the way that vision is articulated is giving you the state of the situation at a given point in time. Because championing development seems to be, you will correct me, in the last time we did the English, they call it a continuous present tense. Maybe you can advise on that. When we go to after that pie, I don't know, there's a pie chart, focus areas, six focal areas. I'm not going there, just a slide after that. This one, yes. I want somebody to educate me about this slide. Because there's a risk of not reading from the same page on the meaning of an outcome, impact statement, and horizontal. When there's a time when you said impact statement, I thought it speaks to reduce level of poverty. And then you say outcome. I'm not sure now what is happening. Maybe somebody can just explain that metrics. All those columns, what relates to what? It may assist one to sort of, again, read from the same page about the things you're speaking about. The graph on poverty lines, I suspect that the upper it goes, the higher the level of poverty, you'll correct me on that. Otherwise, the other one, again, is what I commented about at the beginning, where you guys are saying your IFU, your IFW, you see it at 100% after 2023. One is worried about that. It's something that maybe you need to take us through so that we can check if we're able to talk the same language. Again, if you can be patient with me a little bit, when we go to your AG's report, there at least you've got three green boxes, which I'm told in terms of AG is good, financial management, financial health, HR, but again, when you say financial management, financial health is good. And yet, at face value, when one looks at the figures, what informs the financial health, but we respect that it's AG that has said that, but it still doesn't change the fact that we need a narrative that underlines that. And one interesting thing is that they say your oversight capabilities are a source of concern, and they are not changing. Now, one asks a question. If the oversight and monitoring are a source of concern and they are not changing, the relationship between good financial management, good financial health, good HR, one doesn't understand, and a serious intervention needed on performance management, procurement and contract. There, serious intervention, there is no change whatsoever there. Now, all I'm saying, there's a lot of contradictions. There is figures financially that are allocated in particular areas which need narrative. so that one can be able to make a credible evaluation, both from monitoring and at a point of evaluation. I'm convinced that a session is needed so that, but for now, tell us what you can tell us, CEO. Over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, honorable members, for all the inputs and questions for clarity. I must say I'm happy with the suggestion of a session with the NDA, and I think it's the reason why I had to locate a slide on the mandate, because it's a challenge that we've been sitting with for quite some time, even with the fifth administration. Unfortunately, we got an opportunity at the tail end of their duration. So we are happy to be invited, Chairperson, and be given an opportunity to take the portfolio committee and members through the entire mandate, who we are, what are we about, and so forth. With regards to the questions and points for clarity that have been shared, I will allocate my team, the CFO. I have my CFO here, I have my COO here, and they'll take other questions as I'll allocate to them. Other questions, safe to say, they fall squarely within the Department of Social Development, like the question from Member Aries, Honorable Member Aries, on the CNDCs, that is the social development, who can provide a list to those CNDCs and the program that takes place there on development. On the board appointment, I think the department is in the rightful space to respond to the issue of the finalization of board appointment, as it started as far back as last year, March. So I think DSD will be happy to respond to that one. I will take just a few on job opportunities, Member Aries, as far as the CSOs are concerned. Yes, we're making some strides.
We expect you to be done by 4:15. Okay.
Okay, Chairperson, thank you.
All right.
So with regards to job opportunities, yes, the CSOs are making strides, especially those who are funded. The one that quickly comes to mind is the one in the Western Cape, which is a Gwebsa cooperative. They've expanded. They started with the employment of just 6 women who were in sewing. They've expanded to have a coffee shop in the taxi rank and the shisanyama and all that, which are sustainable jobs, with the 39 youth employed in those permanent. Some are in sewing and some are in the other opportunities that we've created. And I want to now allocate from Member Abram, the skills audit, the consulting fees, the Nzalama, and to Ms. Dlamini, and the COO, Ms. Kumalo, will take on the CSOs in terms of the funding, the percentage thereof, and what is it that we're doing, the gender-based violence support, for CSOs. And I would want to take on the Mekong as well, belongs to DSD. I'm sure DSD was happy to give a report on the 2017 and the implementation of Mekong thus far. Other colleagues, Mr. Morule will take the clarity on the slides that it talks to the outcomes, and that one that talks to the key strategies that was highlighted. And the CFO will talk to the issues of financials that have been asked in this meeting. So can I have, in that order, starting, Ms. Dlamini, if you can start to respond. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thanks, Chairperson. Thank our portfolio and the members, ESCO and the colleagues, and good morning. I will start with the skills audit. The skills audit has already been conducted.
Yeah,
open your video, Mazamini.
Yes. The skills audit has been conducted this financial year. And like has then been, I mean, the previous financial year, 2020-21, and it was concluded. And the members will acknowledge and appreciate that, like, when you address the skills audit gaps that are identified, it needs to be linked to a particular budget. So therefore, it is very important that we did not over
a budget or not over budget. So 30% was to focus on ideally the skills gaps that will talk to the turnaround strategy of the organization. And what has been at least an outcome of this old skills audit was that we've identified and realized that the NDA colleagues, they have like the formal qualifications and they have gone through trainings that actually support, meaning they're qualified. What is missing is like the soft skills that are needed to actually implement the organizational strategy. So the 30% is actually more or less leading to the limitations of e-budget, and we'll roll it out in the outer years, prioritizing all the skills that are critical to implement the strategy. And then in terms of the 7 million that is allocated to IT, members will appreciate and acknowledge that like having a good infrastructure in ICT is actually quite expensive. So these 7 million, it covers mainly maintenance of having to have a good platform, IC infrastructure, networks for about 15 offices, systems that are in place, building disaster recovery site, and mobile connectivity, or to align as well with like the issues of like working remotely and so forth, and making sure that works continue, and in making sure that like all these offices are fully equipped and like we are able to function as an organization. So those costs are the costs that emanate from the ICT cost, and we will appreciate that those are actually quite a bit expensive costs to maintain the ICT infrastructure. And then in terms of the 80% money that has actually already been spent on the system that is called Nzalama. Nzalama is a system that was developed to make sure that it automates some of the program two, which is like your core NDA mandate. Program two, a CSO's development model. So you would know that like the NDA has got CSO's development model. We call it like it's a framework that was developed by NDA. What that project was meant to do was to automate that model and automate the operation in program two. Because in NDA, we never had a dedicated system that assists the organization to do its core work. So we only had your financial systems, your HR system, but we never had systems that deals with that. So what is highlighted there, members and chair, is that like AG is highlighting that there could be a potential risk if this particular system, it does not meet the needs of the NDA and NDA does not actually use it, because there's already money that is actually involved in that particular system. So what has going to be happening internally within the financial year is that a process will be conducted to actually investigate further to say like, has NDA bought something that was actually not their need, or does NDA probably need further intervention to assist the NDA staff to actually have acceptance or acknowledge or embrace this new system that has actually been implemented and closing the gap. So the AG did not necessarily indicate that like the system is implemented and money spent and it's not there. The system is there. The system has actually been implemented. It's a question whether does it meet the NDA needs? Does it fit and build according to what NDA is required, which will then further be investigated and further processes would actually therefore be taken care of. So some of the consulting fees that we would have in terms of within the ICT or software development and putting in place infrastructure business continuity. Those are the consulting fees that we will pay within the cost center for ICT. I thank you, Chair and CEO. Thank you.
Malcolm? Yes, Chair?
No, Prophet.
Malcolm, I'll please come through. Once you have also.
Here's Amakuma. Where's the Amakuma? Where's Abscondin?
Can while we wait for Amakuma, can you move through to Mr. Morule so that you take on that one? Then we have CFO. Then we go back to Amakuma. Thank you.
As it pleases, my lady.
Thanks, Chair.
I'm trying to go back to the slide, Chair. I think it's slide 11. Perhaps let's start with slide 11. I'm hoping it shows on your side, Chair and members. Just to explain that slide and what it is and what it does. This is work done by Stats South Africa. And on an annual basis, they release these poverty lines. And there are three poverty lines. It's the food poverty line, lower bound poverty line, and the upper bound poverty line. Now, what we are observing here, Chair, is that it's a trend from 2006 to 2020. The numbers for April 2021 have not been released yet. I think they will be released around June or so. I'm not sure. But these were the poverty, for example, if you look at the lower one, which is the food poverty line, the one in blue, in 2006, the food poverty line was sitting at just above 200. Now, it has risen to just below 600, which is 585. And that's how this graph should be interpreted. The same applies to the lower bound.
So it's a deterioration.
Chair?
Is it a deterioration?
It is a, well, I suppose because there's inflation. So it factors inflation over the years. So whereas in 2006 we would have had less than 200, which is the food poverty line. Inflation has of course significantly affected it to where it's currently sitting at 585. So this is just the effect of inflation on the poverty line.
Are these money figures or people who are poor or people who don't have access?
No, these are money figures. It's a money metric measure.
Okay. All right. It's a level of expenditure.
Yeah, so in other words, although the measures are not, I think to a very large extent they are intended to advise government on what to invest towards reduction of poverty. But if, for example, let's take an example of the 350 share. The 350, that provision for those that are unemployed falls below the food poverty line. I think that's the point that the CEO was trying to make, that the almost an appropriate measure that meets the food poverty, that would erase food poverty, you would need 585, because they take a number of baskets of, for example, food, bread, and all of those.
Yeah.
So that's what it is, just a money metric measure, Chair. So that's the first slide. And perhaps let me go then to the second slide with the Chair. Referred to, which is measuring impact and outcomes. This comes out of the revised framework for strategic plans and annual performance plans. So and this relates more to the strategy than the APP. But of course, these outcomes are further implemented by the APPs themselves. So what we have initially is that you have as an organization have to determine your what is your impact statement, and we had quite a, I think about a 3-day workshop to come and
to try and determine these things. The first one was, what is our impact statement? And our impact statement is to have reduced levels of poverty in South Africa, because that speaks to our very mandate. If you look at our primary mandate, it's around poverty. In fact, our mandate speaks to poverty eradication. And we are speaking here to reduce levels of poverty in South Africa, which again fits into what is entailed in the NDP. Now, in order to arrive at this, an impact statement is not something to, for example, it's not something to attain as such. In other words, it is what we endeavor through our efforts to the outcomes to arrive at. But we recognize that there's quite a number of players, and even the measurement of impact as well would not only be limited to NDA. It would be far wider than NDA. In fact, it's government-wide. But there's a set of outcomes that we then put in place that seek to take us to this reduced level. So at least in measurable terms, we must be able to say that we were at this particular level in terms of our poverty reduction efforts, and we have made a headway in the sense that we are now sitting here. So by 5 years, we should be able to make that measurement and make it very clear to portfolio committee and parliament as such. Now, there are four outcomes that, remember, there are three programs in NDA. So there are four outcomes, that seek to implement the mandate of the NDA. The first one is good governance. And good governance sits, a large part of it sits in program one, which is administration. Now, there are specifics that we as the NDA are targeting to give implementation to this good governance outcome. The first one is effective systems in place to achieve good governance. In other words, and in the APP, the presentation that we made mention of the irregular, fruitless and wasteful expenditure, the fact that we want to reduce by 80%, 90% and 100% in the outer year. So that's what we are striving towards, so that we can realize what is in the 5-year target, which is a clean audit. So our 5-year target is to have a clean audit, and our current baseline is what our current performance is in relation to the audit.
I think you have explained it. Okay. You just use examples, you can proceed to something else.
Okay, thank you, Chair. See you back.
Thank you, Ben. Can I have Makhumalo? She's back, then CFO will come after Makhumalo. Thank you.
Thank you, CEO, and good afternoon, Honorable Chair, members, CEOs and colleagues. I had not absconded, Honorable Chair. My laptop froze on me, and my apologies on that.
Let us see to prove you have not absconded.
Okay. Thanks, Honorable Chair. On the number of international donors that the NDA has managed to partner with, I should mention that we don't have international donors, except that we have a partnership with Hope Worldwide SA, in which we work with them in terms of capacitating CSOs, particularly on the area of ECD. And then on the second question on the number of CSOs which we are targeting to support in 2021-2022, we are targeting, Honorable Chairperson, more than 5,000 CSOs, which we will work with and make sure that they get all the necessary support that they require. And then the next one is on the departments which we have relations with. I should mention that we have working relations with all departments, particularly at the provincial level, because our work depends on the area of work that is at hand, and also the issues that are there to be addressed. So we have working relations with all departments, Honorable Chair. And then on the list of CNDCs and the development programs in the CNDCs, we will make that list and all the information related to that available through the Department of Social Development. And then the next question, Honorable Chair, is on the issue of child malnutrition, what we do as the NDA. we have programs where we focus on food gardens in East. What we do is that as we grant fund ECD centers, we make sure that they establish food gardens in the various centers to make sure that those food gardens address the issues of malnutrition for the children and hunger. And we also work with, as I mentioned, Hope Worldwide, SA. We also make sure that our partners do provide support such as food parcels to ECD centers, and also information on nutrition and stuff related to that. And then there was a question on the capacitation of CSOs focusing on GBV. I should mention the fact that as the NDA, we were appointed by the Department of Social Development to be the implementing agency for the CARA project. Out of that project, we work with 312 CSOs for this particular phase, the first phase of the CARA project. And we have capacitated all the 312 CSOs in terms of how to manage the CSOs, including financial management, conflict management, and issues related to GBV itself. But now we have extended the program to include mentoring and coaching for the 312 CSOs, particularly those that are still at the they are not yet established. So we are focusing on now mentoring and coaching them to make sure that they get well established and they are able to operate on their own and become sustainable. And the last one, I think it's on monitoring of CSOs. Our teams in provinces, what they do, as much as they support in terms of mobilization of the CSOs and assessing them to ensure that whatever support that they get will be according to their needs, because you find that some CSOs are operating, but they are not registered. So when we come as part of the intervention to make sure that we take them through the registration process, which we call formalization, they get formalized. And if there's an area where they need capacity building, we'll take them through that program of capacity building. And also if they need grant funding, we support them to develop to develop proposals, which will make sure if we are able to grant fund them as the NDA we do, if we are able to refer them to other funders, they will refer them there and make sure that they receive the necessary support there. And after they've received the funding, we monitor how they implement the programs as per the proposals that they have submitted. So we do monitor the work of the CSOs, and we make sure that when we pull out as the NDA, the CSO is able to continue to survive or to be sustainable on its own. I think those are all the questions that are related to the program too, Honorable Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Can I have CFO presenting on the responding on the financials, and our time is against us, CFO? We are 8 minutes past 12. We are giving up to quarter past. Thanks.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, CEO. So let me quickly go to the questions then. So in relation to the first one, I think the COO has covered it in terms of our funding from international donors. We currently do not have any funding from international donors. And purely from other state-owned organizations. In terms of the skills audit, in terms of why only 30% of the recommendations may be implemented in this current financial year, it is because it is related to the budget that is available. So we've made an amount of between 500 to 600,000 available for the implementation of specific recommendations relating to competency assessments for high priority areas and also for a specific training.
Did I cover the question?
No, it was good.
Okay, I was like, what I was writing.
Can you hear me in the voice?
Sorry, COO, just mute everyone. Do you mind to unmute yourself? Thank you. The speaker that was on the floor, can she unmute herself?
All right, so in terms of the budget that is available for the implementation of the recommendations of the skills audit, so some will relate to the competency assessments for high priority areas, as well as the implementation of training and training interventions for other areas in terms of the recommendation. It is purely a budget issue that impacts on the percentage implementation of the recommendations. In terms of consulting fees and consulting and professional fees, so what makes up these costs relates to professional fees relating to IT. So in terms of the IT, the applications that we have on the go, as well as our IT projects that we are implementing, we do require consulting support on that. So there's IT consulting that's built in there. It's legal fees relating to cases that we have ongoing, as well as the provision for what we may be dealing with in the financial year, including an amount of provision for the investigation recommendations, the outcome of investigations relating to irregular and fruitless and wasteful expenditure. So we do require legal support in terms of the disciplinary, running the disciplinary processes in terms of those recommendations. Also included in there would be the HR consulting support, so specifically relating to the skills audit, which I've just spoken to. Also included in there would be a provision for any internal audit projects that would need to be outsourced. Included in there also would be consulting and professional fees for finance, especially relating to improvements on our financial system. So any improvements to our financial system in terms of implementing cost-saving initiatives, for example, would find expression in this line item. And then additionally here would be some consulting fees for marketing. It's only a provision though. Because most of the marketing expense line items will fall directly under marketing, which I will talk to as to what falls in there as well. In terms of the IT costs, so I think my colleague has covered it, but if I can quickly talk to the items that appear there. So specifically under IT costs, we budget for, communication costs relating to our internet services, the software licenses, application support, ICT security, as well as the consulting fees will fall under consulting and professional fees. And then of course our internet services extends over a number of offices over the 9 provinces, including provincial and district offices. So that's what makes up the IT cost of 7 million, and it is quite expensive especially in terms of our software and our internet services. In terms of leases, so the budget here is 12.2 million. And we have leases across all the provinces, including district offices. We have about 5 leases that are nearing termination in the financial year, and which, if I'm not mistaken, have already been advertised. So we've advertised these because we are looking also for ways to reduce the lease costs that we incur. And because of the lower demand for office space, there are opportunities here to reduce the cost per square meter. So we have advertised this. And in the past financial year, we closed offices in the Northern Cape and in the Western Cape. And we will also be advertising here for smaller offices, just to ensure that we do have a presence, but at a lower cost. In terms of the utilization of our office spaces, all our offices are being utilized, but of course, in compliance with the regulations relating to the number of staff that are allowed to be on site. Staff are working on a rotational basis. And so any space not being utilized will relate directly to the implementation of those legal provisions. In terms of Nzilama, so we've spent 3.9 million already of the 4.5 million contract for the development. And this does represent 85% of the development. The development was allocated to various phases in terms of the system. So the main one being the CSO database, and that has been developed. What is outstanding is the mobile app and integration with our finance system. And because the system, the development work has been put on hold, those haven't progressed. And the reason why it has been put on hold is because there is currently a reconciliation process that is being attempted to determine the value for money that has been received in terms of what has been developed and the, you know, the money that has been spent thus far. Especially, and also an assessment on whether the system is being used for its intended purposes. In terms of our employment costs do make up 65% of our total budget. And, you know, the thing is, yeah, so we are a little top heavy in terms of our total staff complement. And this whole turnaround strategy project that we are undertaking will not only determine the business model, the operating model, and so on, but will also determine the organizational structure required to deliver on the revised business model. So depending on the outcome and the outcomes of those recommendations from the turnaround strategy, our organizational structure may change. And of course, we will await for those recommendations as the turnaround strategy is implemented. The other thing to remember with our employment costs is that our work is labor intensive in terms of the development work, and does require a whole number of development specialists to assist, you know, with the CSO's capacitization, the training, and also the monitoring of the various projects that we have on the go. I think I've tried to cover most of the questions, CEO, and I hope I have covered it. Thank you.
Thank you very much, CFO. Chairperson, on the standing question about CSD with the board appointment with Mikonzo and CNDCs. I'm not sure the approach by the chairperson, but I think as far as our questions were concerned, we have tried to respond to them all. And if they are outstanding one, we are happy to do a written submission to the portfolio committee. I must thank the chairperson and honourable members, minister and deputy minister, for the opportunity. And we're always encouraged by your counsel and your guidance in us improving our service delivery for the benefit of our citizens in the country. Thank you, chairperson. And we are looking forward for the session to present who NDA is and who what it stands for. Thank you, chairperson.
That is going to be very useful. Dear or Minister?
I'm here, Chairperson.
Okay.
Yes, I'm here. I don't know if the DM is here, but I am.
No, I thought you are not here, Minister.
No, I'm back, Chair. Remember, I said I'm just doing the whatever ceremony, I've been listening throughout whenever I got the chance, so I didn't lose much.
Okay.
Yes.
I am here. Thank you, Minister.
Oh, okay. DM. I was looking for you here. I couldn't see you. I don't know if you have anything to say, DM. Please go ahead.
No, I'm good, except to say to the committee, the session will be important because I think NDA is one of the aspects that are half the time misunderstood, but also is also one of the DSD entities that has evolved a lot, where the business case has been administration based. So the different administrations had NDA having different focus areas. So it will be important that in that particular session, the NDA is able to also outline its evolution from the time that it was established, because I think it's a very important piece of background for members. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thank you, Minister.
Why in your hands, Minister?
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you, DM. As I indicated, Chair, I had that bit of a responsibility, but I have been here. I've been connecting. I did listen to both presentations. And I wish to thank the DM for the comments and all the questions that were also asked by the by the members, but I'm also encouraged in particular, Chairperson, by the issue of having a session, because you recall, Chairperson, and I keep on going back to how we started and how I wish we must not lose sight of how we started and be consistent in what we did. We had a workshop, and this session that is being requested, I think a member Van der Merwe is the one that spoke to that. I thank all the members for their questions. I just want, in closing, to make to say this, that the reality of the coronavirus has uncovered and emphasized our people's unsettling lived experience. And if this is what is going to be at the center of our work and at the center of our performance, I think we'll always be able to respond to the felt needs of our people. And of course, we note that now we're celebrating 27 years into democracy, and it is indispensable that we ought to do things differently towards improvement of the lives of all South Africans. And I know that sometimes we feel this becomes a slogan we say, improving the lives of our people. But the fact that we are able to come here and be held accountable and be assisted in improving the work that we do, Honorable Van der Merwe is correct in characterizing the perpetual turnaround strategy. With a few exceptions, this phrase can be applied to most of what has been presented since we started with our work. And it's time for us to really move. How will we know if the social development portfolio is having an intended impact among our people, which the portfolio committee members keep on saying to us that they want to see the impact? And my view is that we will know when the department has attended to and addressed the unresolved 81% of the issues that the Auditor General reported to the Portfolio Committee. Then talking about the process that will lead to this, I'm actually referring to the realization of the outcome itself. And also, Chairperson, in order for the portfolio to be truly transformed and developmental in outlook, the department, SASSA and NDA in its portfolio, in my view, still needs to transcend the current challenges and deepen sector, government and society-wide coordination of all towards the comprehensive social development that we speak about. And key to this is the pursuit of meaningful people, public, private, civic, academic and multilateral partnership. Chairperson, I raise this particular issue because I think one of the members also asked a question about partnership and what other support NDA gets outside of government. The CEO will tell you, Chairperson, that I've indicated to the CEO that there are many international development agencies, global ones and international ones, that have an agenda which is similar to the NDA. And I've said to the CEO, let's try and tap into those, starting with the UN international bodies that are here. So I also think we will also know that the social development portfolio is having the intended societal impact when the issues that are being raised in the BRRR are addressed. And Chair, I do want to say to you that I'm very consistent both in the entire portfolio to say the issues that are raised by the BRRR must be responded to by the portfolio. And therefore, honorable members, we'll also know the social development portfolio is having the intended societal impact when the programs of the portfolio are delivered through the district-centered development model. This is the only way that communities are going to access programs and services. We have, I've created something that we call a situation room, Chairperson, where we look at the issues that are hurting our people. We look at the issues, not separate from the institutional process, but I thought it would be important for us to be able to come together as a portfolio and address directly the issues that are hurting, the issues that are making us look like we are not doing our work. So as our collective society is working towards socioeconomic recovery from the impact of COVID-19, my call has been that the social development portfolio to institutionalize the Council of Honorable Members, and we've said this many a time, it is upon this that we are going to create the conducive conditions where the South Africa we want and the South African we want to inhabit will be fulfilled. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Oh, thank you very much, Minister. What a way to close. Quite elaborate and quite involving, quite foresighted, quite stimulatory in terms of a productive, collaborative relationship. We must thank you, Minister, for that. Honorable members, Lindy, is there anything? You know, when I said Lindy,
I think of, I really say yes. I know, Chair. I feel the same.
Every time when I say Lindy, I looked at you. I said, but this is not the one I'm calling.
Let me remove myself from the camera, Chair.
Yeah, all the items gone.
Yes, Chair.
Thank you very much. Honorable members, the department, your team minister and all your staff, and our support team in the portfolio committee, we are heading towards a very strenuous exercise of public hearings. We want to meet the deadline of the courts on the foster care. And up to this point, I'm excited with every effort, everyone who is trying to help us ensure that we meet those deadlines. So we're going to be away from homes for some time. And please make sure that you communicate with your families. As Tsundukazi takes us to all provinces in the country. And let's go and read the documents and gather a collective summary of the submissions. And I'm not sure when is that going to circulate.
Yes, Chair, Friday, this coming Friday, there's a meeting scheduled for the content advisor to take you through the submissions. I think the document will be ready tomorrow morning.
Thank you very much. Colleagues, honorable members, thank you very much. The meeting is
sorry, Chair, can I say something, Yolisa?
Yes.
Thank you, Chair. Just to maybe to explain to members that there are two documents or reports. One is the comprehensive one that covers all the submissions and summaries and recommendations, which is now sitting at about 150 pages, which is still going to go more, but I've made a summary. So that's a summary that I'm going to forward tomorrow morning, just to make it easy for members to
read. Please. You will give us the detail, but please give us a summary. Some of us, it's okay. Don't look at my head and think it's big and think it also has the stamina. it can be misleading. Thank you, colleagues. Have a good day.
Thank you, Chair. Maybe Natis is Ovela, Guamanya Lauma public hearings, if we can
That would be nice. That would be nice, Minister.
That's one or two so that we don't occupy space, but it will be good to
where you can is also will be encouraging us and supporting us. Thank you very much, Minister. Thank you. Thank you,
Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you.
Thank you. Can I end the meeting, members?
Let's go.
Thanks.